And then we're going to go.
Go ahead.
Okay. Good. So, welcome. We are reconvening back from closed session, and the report out. Do you want me to give it?
Staff met on one item on the agenda with the board, and the board gave staff direction.
Okay. So, next item is our presentation from CAL FIRE.
So we've got Chief Jeff Hogue with us. He's done a tremendous amount of work in kind of this wildfire defense reduction area. And I asked him to come down and give a presentation because at the Board of Supervisors meeting, I believe on the 10th, they've approved these LRA maps. And I know there's been a lot of conversation about the LRA maps. We really don't have a bunch of say in them. And so I really wanted Jeff to let you know, well, what does that mean? You know, what's it look like going down the road? So, Chief.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. Again, my name is Jeff Hogue. I'm the Lieutenant Chief oversee our wildfire resiliency program here in the unit. So I'm not the expert on these maps. We do have four battalion chiefs assigned in the state that are actually filled out, and they have all the information on this stuff, but just given my position and my exposure to this, I feel like I can speak to it pretty well. But if I don't get to everything, I may not have the answer. We can get you the answer. So that's easy enough. CAL FIRE's done a good job. They set up a site here. It's called their LRA Fire Hazard Severity Zone Hub. And they have this presentation that they created. This isn't mine. And then there's also some other information that you can pull off there too. I can show you that at the end of the this presentation. We can also look at the maps and go over theirs. But the goal tonight is, again, like Chief Johnson said, the county has already gone through their process through their first reading to adopt this. It is a requirement through government code for them to adopt it within a specific time frame. Once that's been done, they submit their adoption, the ordinance to the Board of Forestry, and then they're done. Then these maps are then enforceable. So, with that.
This only happens during meetings, by the way.
So a little bit of other background. This was a big update for the LRA Fire Hazard Severity Zone maps. This is slightly different than the state responsibility SRA Fire Hazard Severity Zone maps. The process was slightly different, but the methodology was similar, with the exception of how they weighted ember cast from the WUI into those more urban areas. We'll get into a little bit of that. It's kind of technical type of thing. Within the state, there are something, I want to say, somewhere in the range of about 300 areas that will have a new, just like we do here at Cameron Park, new fire hazard severity zones within their jurisdictions, so which was not mapped before. So these requirements that are going to go along with this, you guys are not alone in this. A lot of it was down south, but a couple of them did happen up here as well. So, next slide. Again, this is a requirement of government code. 51178, 51179, we'll get into 51182. Those are all like sister ordinances to public resources code, like in terms of like adoption and requirements that go along with things like defensible space. Really addresses a lot of things about WUI and how we're going to go about doing development, that type of stuff. So it's in three different levels of hazard. You have your moderate, high, and very high. There's certain requirements that go for each one of those levels of hazard. Again, like I mentioned, so there's using a new problem. Process. This has been vetted out through on the SRA side, but what we're doing is we're using actual fire modeling. You know, we're taking a look at the actual landscape itself, running those models based on, you know, there are things like historical weather, fire history, topography, fire behavior, all those kind of things that go into a specific model, and then that's how we get what our fire hazard severity zones are. Different from this is specifically for hazard, right? Different from risk. And I'll go into that. So hazard is, it's like a flood map, right? So an area has the potential to flood, right? Not going to cause any issues if there's no structures or homes or anything there that could potentially be damaged. The homes, the structure, that's what we're calling risk, just like here. So you have a high hazard, you could have a lot of highly flammable vegetation, but if there's no structures around, it's just a very high hazard with very low risk, right? But you start putting homes in that area, now the risk starts to go up. Make sense to associations? So that's like, and that's a nuance there that we need to like you have a good grasp on how we're going through this. Again, so those are all the criteria that they use to kind of work at this. The firehouses of Arizona maps have been around for a while. On the SRA side, historically, they like when it first came out, they were required to do it by the legislature. And it was determined, honestly, by a battalion chief that would drive around and say, like, oh, yeah, that looks like a bad area, and that didn't. So it didn't really have a really good means or methods of how they did it. You would find two areas that were the same fuel types that had very different designations. So that's another reason that they went through this process, but on the science and data side, to make sure that it's correct and uniform throughout the state. Okay. So, yeah, these are some of the updates that came with this. They've done this, like, historically, they did it before somebody guessed, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. Use some data and science, but these are some of the updates that came along with the most recent update to these severity zone maps. So, mostly, again, this one right here is what's really going to have an effect on the local responsibility area, because, again, we're going from the wildland area into an urban environment, right? So with that, how we get these big urban conflagrations, a lot of it has to start with ember cast and getting those structures going, and then we start to have like a structure-to-structure kind of component, or urban conflagration, as we call it. Let's see here. This is kind of some of the technical stuff where, again, I'm not the expert on, so I'm sure some of those Sacramento chiefs could really deep dive into here, but so we can just go through line by line. Zones are relatively homogeneous with slope and vegetation, so it's gonna, if you have a zone that is like a moderate, it's gonna look like a moderate everywhere else, right? Maps are produced at a 30 meter resolution. Scores are averaged within a zone, because obviously different plants grow within that zone. We only have three to choose from. Scored independently of any urban or agriculture, and they're scored using additional models and steps. If you go to the fire hazard site, you can do a really, really deep dive into this and their methodology. And there's a flow chart that's probably 28 bubbles long, type of thing. So. So there's a minimum for a specific severity zone of 200 acres. I believe this is for SRA. I think it chokes down a little bit for LRA. The next slide goes over that. So the urban fire hazard severity zones is down to a minimum of a 20-acre isolated islands of vegetation. But the goal is that they're fairly homogenous, right? That you're not going to have 1 acre of moderate, 1 acre high, and 1 acre very high. So you have like at least some predictability about the map. Let's see here. There's a buffer zone as we work our way into the urban areas, and that's that ember production that I talked about earlier. So that's the addition to the model that we use in the state responsibility to determine the fire hazard severity zone, is how the adjacent WUI has ember production that goes into the urban areas. So that's kind of the big difference on the science and data and modeling piece from the SRA models that we did here. And if I'm getting too technical here, just let me know and I can try to explain it a different way. So ember transport, and then again it goes into the width, so that buffer zone just depends on the amount of ember production that's happening out in the wildland zone as it's working in. Okay, so here's, we've done all these maps, and like Chief Johnson said, we have to adopt them as they're given. But what do we do with them? What do we do with these maps? What do they mean for, you know, the community here? Number one, building standards. So there's what we call Chapter 7A, or more commonly referred to as like home hardening. That's that resilient materials and methods that you use for, you know, when you're building a modern home that could be affected by wildfire. So here you have requirements now, a home that's being built in a very high, and I believe high, there's a slide on here, it will be required to have Chapter 7A. So that's things like non-combustible siding, vents have restrictions on them as well, certain type of windows, all that type of stuff. It's all in the building code. This one too, property development standards. So that is the Title 14 stuff. That is the California Fire Safe Regulations. Those are the minimum development standards that are required in SRA and LRA, very highest fire hazard severity zones. That addresses water supply, access, and then also there's potential for like fuel breaks that could be associated with, depending upon the development that you're working on there. So there's limits to like length of roads, there's requirements for driveways, those types of things. That's something I deal with pretty heavily in my office, is we get in fire safe plans, we get in tentative maps, we take a look at those and make sure that they meet at least the minimum for the fire safe regulations, and those are in place so that we don't have you know, a 10-mile long, 8-foot wide road covered in brush. And you say, go down there, Cal Fire, and then or fire department, and fight the fire. Like, that doesn't work for us, right? So it's really a safety thing, not only for the fire department, operational space, but also for the public as well. So they're designed so we have ingress and egress at the same time.
So you know there's a development by Slide Park where there's only one road in, one road out.
Mm-hmm.
Is that addressed now that they can't, they have to be more than one way to it?
So anything that's already been approved, we can't do anything about that. It's like approved in the tentative map or the final map. When, you know, anything done prior to 1991, before the fire safe regulations were in place, wouldn't have that. So that's why we have so many of these long meandering single lane roads. Now that they're in place, there's really nothing that we can do to say require them to, you know, widen the road or do any of that kind of stuff, unless there's additional development down that road.
And then it opens it up.
Then it opens it up again. All right. So we do do that. Cal Fire also has gone through a process of identifying one-way in, one-way-out communities that have 30 or more structures in them. Gone through that entire process in the county. I think we identified over 90-something within the county. What we do with that information, I use it a little bit for determining like where we're going to be doing defensible space inspections and some other stuff. It's really just a tool. There's no requirements that necessarily go along with that. Like I mentioned earlier, defensible space will be required in, I know at the very minimum, the very high. I think it's also high. There's a slide here explaining that. And then finally, the natural hazard real estate disclosure. That is the requirement to have a defensible space inspection done to your home incumbent upon the seller prior to the sale of your home. So that is a point of sale requirement now. EdCar, we work pretty closely with them, so they're pretty well aware of those, and there's a process that folks can go through. Cal Fire has a website set up, they can do a request, and then either Cal Fire, local jurisdiction can come out and do that inspection. So those are the big ones, and then this is the shows you exactly where all those requirements are. So I mentioned, previous slide mentioned what they are. This is what's required in the SRA. And now for LRA, we've got a requirement, obviously you've got to adopt the maps, which they've already done. There's some CEQA requirements. Subdivision Map Act, that is a requirement when you have a development, you have to send a report to the Board of Forestry. We do that for all the tentative maps in the county at this point. Safety element requirements. So when you guys open up your general plan or safety element, you got to go through there and address specifically wildfire. Fire safe regulations I mentioned earlier, Chapter 7A, defensible space, hazard disclosure, and then again that subdivision review, that one way in, one way out, that'll all be here. Some of this stuff is already being done, and other things are kind of incumbent upon the county to make sure that they are being taken care of. LRA. So we got, like I mentioned, so Chapter 7A and real estate disclosure will be required also in the high severity zone, LRA high, and adopt the severity zone to moderate. So there's two now requirements for very high and high. There's an adoption timeline that goes along with that. The county's already doing, it's getting, showing the maps, making them public within a specific amount of time, and adopting them and submitting to the board of forestry. So that's already been done. Then, here's information on, again, there's like a whole site that has to, you do a really deep dive into this and get all that type of information.
Go back every time.
To the hub site that we were on. Okay. I'm just going to populate the map, so if you guys have any questions right now, feel free to.
I'm sorry, starting with the board questions, and then we'll take it out to the public. Do we have any?
So Cameron Park has got pockets of high and very high. Is it changed now with more, if we're now very high, the whole Cameron Park?
We'll show you the map.
I'm going to say, where's our map?
Don't show us that. Yeah. Depending on what neighborhood you're on, or maybe which side of the street. Yeah.
Okay.
Cameron Park, they have the most significant change.
Well, I'm so exactly. Glad that my insurance renewed 2 weeks ago.
I'll say it all out.
You're abreast with here. So, question?
Chief Hogue, I know the county is moving down this process to adopt. Is there anything that we need to do as an agency, our jurisdiction at all, or is it just purely at the county level?
It's at the county level. Okay. I'm not 100% familiar with how CSDs interact with that, but I'm assuming that at the county level.
All the county, okay.
Yeah, the county will approve the maps, and the local jurisdictions don't really get much of a say.
Okay.
Perfect.
All right, any other questions from the board?
So on a real estate transaction, buyer or seller, then is it just a notification from the seller to the buyer, or are they required to do certain things? What does that look like?
It's a hazard disclosure, just like if any other type of natural hazard disclosure you do during a real estate transaction, where you identify where the house is located, that kind of stuff. And then you also have to identify if you've made any improvements. And what the real purpose of it is so that you move into an area that has a really high fire hazard. Now you know, right? So you don't just show up and be like, oh man, I didn't realize that all the forests around was going to burn down. It's a disclosure.
So it's not the fire hardening is not required?
Not required.
Not yet.
No. And how they do that is you get a defensible space inspection prior to the close of the transaction. If they can't, or if the seller and buyer want to make an agreement to defer that, they can. But it's easier. If I'm a buyer, I'm going to say, yeah, I want that inspection so I know what I'm getting into, just like how you would for 8 years.
So like termites or anything else?
Correct.
Is you accepting the risk or you,
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right, anything else from the board? Taking it out to the public. Yes.
President Wong, Cameron Park. So properties that jump from a moderate to a high, that is pretty much based on the Embercast evaluations from somebody looking on a Google map or some kind of aerial map of the area for the vegetation and development?
It's a whole modeling procedure that took place, where they consider historical weather data, fire history. So if you have repeated ignitions in the area, that could be a consideration. It does consider the vegetation type and fuel loading as well. They'll either use LIDAR or maybe a synthetic LIDAR to do that as well. And then there's a couple other things, like Embercast being one of them. So it's not somebody just looking at a document saying, oh, I think that that's bad. It goes through, we have technology now that we can
model it.
We can pretty accurately model some fire behavior, what's to be expected. Again, I guess one other point. So these hazard maps are, they are intended to reflect a hazard over a 30 to 50 year time frame. So if you go out and you do a big fuel modification project, it's not going to change your severity zone. That's a question I guess quite a bit. Or if a fire comes through your area, and all of a sudden you're like,
there's nothing here, yeah.
You know, 30, 50 years, that hazard will be back. And the reason that they do it that way is, again, these maps are to inform where we're going to have requirements. So, like, let's say fire burns through an area, and you go to rebuild, knowing that that hazard is likely going to come back. So you want to make sure.
Could you look on the map, kind of where Cameron Park is? For
yeah, we're right here.
Okay, thank you.
And I can you zoom in?
That thing that looks like a red light.
The lobster.
But we're bright red.
Yeah, so all this area here in the gray unzoned, but that's all within Cameron Park, local responsibility area. And then, you can see it kind of tiers. It goes from moderate high to very high.
Yeah, so this building has no fire hazard.
When you jump in the pool.
Yeah, this map can, you can, there's a little search bar up there. You can type in your address if you want to pop it on there.
Nice.
Okay, other questions from the public?
So I think a couple things to be really aware of is a significant change in Cameron Park. We got that giant kidney shape there down the center of it, and then you also got along the east side, along the Pine Hill Preserve, really your high severity zones. So as you think back to the prior PowerPoint that Jeff talked about and the things that trigger with that very high severity zone within there, so one is the real estate inspections, but the other requirement is also defensible space. So that becomes the responsibility of the district now that has to enforce the defensible space within those very high severity zones. So I think that's a really important note to take on this when we start looking at that. And we've been talking about defensible space and some of these other things in the fire prevention realm. This, by this map coming out to very high, now it puts some of the onus back onto the district that there is a responsibility that comes with this to do these things along with it. Any sale will require an inspection, as Jeff talked about. The district currently has 300 vacant parcels, so as we talk about new construction in Chapter 7, you're really talking amongst the entire fire district 300 vacant parcels. We don't have very big contiguous zones to build a new development, but it would be those individual homes on those parcels that would be subject to that Chapter 7 in there. So there's some things that come with that, and that was part of the reason of the presentation that General Manager wanted to present and for us to have the discussion and give just that initial briefing to you all so you can really start looking into some of these things and as you have future discussions, be able to contemplate that because of these new very high zones, because that does kick in the defensible space and a couple other things that are now be required. As Jeff said, these maps are pre-produced in the local responsibility area, which is what we refer to as the LRA. There's really no public outreach or public comment prior to them finalizing the maps. They build the maps and here it is, this is what they are. The county has to adopt them. And off they go. So once the county adopts them, then they will become finalized, and these are here. So it really kind of puts the local districts, the local entities, at a bit of a disadvantage because there's really no public comment to say, hey, I don't think this area should be there or that. When we did the state responsibility areas, the local CAL FIRE units got to at least comment in, not necessarily that all the comments were you know, approved in that, but we got to make a fighting choice. But with the local areas, there is none of that. So it's more of the education to the board to really understand that this is coming out. There is a big change to Cameron Park with the very high in that area. And so to be prepared as board members, because a lot of things that come with this, you mentioned you are glad that you just renewed your insurance policy.
Shocked.
Right? So those are the things that are going to be coming toward from your constituents towards you all as board members, and want to make sure that you're educated at least and understand. And we can make sure we, general manager, sent the link out to this so you all have it and can reference it and look through. But a fairly significant change as we look through El Dorado County. Cameron Park had probably one of the biggest changes in the entire county.
When does this have the biggest change?
When does this take
effect? We have the biggest change.
So once the county adopts them officially, they did their first reading last week, 30 days, and then they go to the...
Got another month or so.
When you say we have the biggest change for local response area?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What that was counting here. Placerville has a significant amount of very high. South Lake Tahoe has a very significant amount of very high in there. So, like, those were already in place, but the one that had a change was actually Cameron Park. The rest of them, Placerville actually saw a slight reduction in some areas.
What about Shingle Springs?
Shingle Springs is all state responsibility area, so that's mapped. Here.
That came out last year.
Yeah, that came out last year. So mm-hmm. You go like to these. So that this is really highlighting the local responsibility area stuff. The stuff that's shaded here is the state responsibility area. So.
So that's, do you know where that big red spot covers?
I mean, if you look at it, you figure that the right side is going to be your Pine Hill Preserve side. Off to the right of the map, and then you've got just off of the airport there.
Does that encompass campus?
So you can see the lake right there. Yeah. The lake's up.
So it looks like it's that whole hilly area, like a Knollwood.
So there's Cambridge.
There's Cambridge. Yep. Well, I know I'm right below that big gigantic parcel. Below the Woodley Hills.
Yeah.
Cambridge is way above.
Oh, and it makes sense. You can look at the hill up there and see the vegetation.
Yeah.
I can't tell.
Exactly. Lots of manzanita. Exactly.
All right. Sorry, are there any other questions?
But when you look at that, you know, like I live on the steppe, so it's right below that big, huge. Mm-hmm. Problem parcel for people that are out of the country. So if that was developed, well, you said it's 50 years, so it doesn't make any difference.
Well, it won't make any difference on the map.
Yeah.
The fire risk, obviously, if you develop,
right.
It goes. The vegetation goes away for a while, and then it comes back 20 plus years. So there'll be an initial drop in risk, sure, but the maps won't change.
These are evaluated every 7 years, so they go through that evaluation process. So. If there's a significant amount of development and vegetation, you know, is no longer a hazard, so to speak, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, mass grading, all that type of stuff, could potentially change. But again, that's an evaluation process that happens 7 years from now.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
I have all this. I'll make sure we send this out there. Toolkit.
So that would be great.
You're okay.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. So the one on the far right is what?
Pine Hill.
Is that Pine Hill?
The green is Pine Hill,
yeah.
The federal Pine mm-hmm. Hill. The red is along Cameron Park Drive, isn't it?
I think it spells it out right there, isn't it?
That's Cameron Park Drive.
Yeah.
Right here.
So it's
in between.
It's the airport.
In between.
Cameron Park and the airport. Well, then that red is on the...
I think it's below the west side.
The risk doesn't go down.
And then, of course, we do not map federal.
Yeah.
Was there a question in the back?
Yeah.
You said there were 30 communities in the county were they in and out of this one road?
It was over 90.
Over 90.
That were identified in the county that went through the subdivision review process.
Somewhat large.
Yeah, so the
20 residences or more.
The minimum criteria was it had to have 30 or more structures of residences. It couldn't just be like an outbuilding. Mm-hmm. It had to have 30 or more structures within that had one way in, one way out access.
Being the same way. The way in is the way out.
And correct.
So those residents, if it's under 30, are they going to
have to
move?
They wouldn't qualify under that legislation.
They wouldn't qualify.
I live on one.
I cut you off.
Yeah. Okay. So I know people that live along American River, and it's one way in, one way out, and there aren't 30 residents that have dead ends.
Right.
And they're kind of at the end.
Right.
So what are the conditions for them?
So, again, all that did was it identified those areas of one way in, one way out.
It didn't create any
additional requirements for that area. Part of that evaluation was there was a report that was given, produced by the Board of Forestry, and it gave recommendations on things you could do. It was like put in the second egress, which we all know it's possible. You're not good. Who's going to let you also build a road through their properties? Some areas, there's been some minor success in that. And then other things like group signage and stuff like that. So really it was to inform.
All right. Any other questions?
I just wanted to ask one more thing. So where the road comes down on the west side of Cannon Park Drive because of the preserve, because the preserve is on the other side, right, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a heavy fuel load over there,
right.
Brush load.
Oh, yeah.
We've done evaluation of that book at the local level as well.
Is that where the weed abatement is supposed to happen?
That's on properties within the district.
Yeah, it's a vacant property.
So,
yeah.
So I can get a more detailed map?
This map is available online.
Okay.
It might be a little bit because we're going
through
Cambridge.
Because I just want to see if they're off of Cambridge. Because I'm not very far off of Cambridge. Right?
Barbara, I'll send a map to you.
Where my place would land.
Barbara, you can send it to me. Barbara, you can enter your address in here, mm-hmm. and it'll click.
Where'd you find that?
And the link that's in the presentation.
Okay, it's Katie.
He'll send it.
Yeah, I'll send that to you.
Yeah, I think just to understand, when we talk about this, we're really looking at that local responsibility area.
Yeah.
Yes.
So as pointed out, if you look to the right, you have the slash pink just on the other side of the red. That's in the state responsibility area. So that's a very high on the state side. But what we're talking about here is what falls under the Cameron Park CSD's jurisdiction at the local level.
Right. Okay.
And so that's why you see that gap. But you do have Pine Hill on the right-hand side that comes in to a very high, and then it continues on the opposite side of Cameron Park Drive in the local responsibility area.
All right. Thank you. Do we have any more board comments?
No, just a statement. Chief Hogue, I just want to thank you for taking the time. I know you're super busy. I appreciate you coming after hours. I got a great opportunity to work with Chief, and he's been just a staple in our county and helping guide us through a lot of our defensible space issues, and he's a wealth of information. So thank you, Chief.
Yep, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have any legal counsel updates?
We do not.
We have none. So at this time, I will open it up for public comment to items that are not on the agenda. Do we have anybody who wants to address the board about anything that isn't on the agenda?
Can we have some form?
Yes. Go ahead, Brad.
Brad McMullen, Cameron Park. Two things. One, I wanted to thank the general manager for making sure the emails got sent out, meeting-specific emails. That's very helpful. Also, thank you for providing the documents based on my year-old public records request.
Yes, sir.
After reviewing the AP Triton report, I must admit, the AP Triton report provided to the district is extremely a professional report.
It's nothing that was given to us as false, fake, whatever. So it's a false representation by this district on this report. I'm at a loss why the fire ad hoc committee or the board members who read it or the previous general manager felt the report had bad numbers in it and held the district in a bad light. It's clear from the AP Triton report, AP Triton reached out several times requesting information formatted in a manner that they would be able to use, and they never received this information. It's clear in the report several times. I don't know if the previous general manager or the finance officer were unable to provide the corrected formatted numbers or just plain abstinent. They were only providing AP Triton the numbers they wanted. That's extremely disheartening to me. The delay of releasing the AP Triton report is clearly an effort of hiding what we the people had a right to see and pay for by tax dollars. Fire ad hoc committee and the board members who read the report supported the previous general manager's personal legal opinion, not a legal opinion. He was not going to release the report. Who does he work for? I'm kind of confused because it seemed like he ran the board when he worked for the board, and then the board works for us. So please try to keep that straight. The board should have been smart enough to read what I read in the report and realize the staff was not doing their job and hold them accountable. Instead, the board voted to pay this employee, who clearly was defiant and disrespectful to the board, a severance package of $155,000. What a clear waste and dereliction of duty on our tax dollars. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Barbara Rogers, Kenner Park. Well, Brad said everything that I was going to say. I also wrote the report. And I'm going to tell you what really bothers me about it is that Mr. Gardner, in my opinion, disparaged these wonderful people that put together this report. And it's wrong. I mean, he's gone now, but it needs to come out. Because he did walk away with $155,000 of our tax dollars, not to mention what we paid for the Triton report, not to mention what we paid Mr. Ashton and for staff time. So, you know, I think it's despicable what happened. I think it is time that the board quit. This is not directed to you, Mo. In the past, I have watched prior boards just listen and follow whatever the general manager lays out. It's your job to be proactive. It's your job to ask questions. I don't hear a lot of interaction and questions at these meetings. You cannot sit there mute and not ask questions. And I am going to direct my dissatisfaction to the two people that sat on this committee that I don't think did their due diligence about this report. Everybody, and now it's people say to me, oh, well, Alan lied to us. Really? Well, we all kind of knew that Alan wasn't right, doing the right thing, but nobody would listen to the public. But it's time you listen to the public, because there is an election coming up, and God willing, I am going to run again and hopefully get other people to run, because it is time that the and Chief Johnson has done a wonderful job with transparency. He's done a wonderful job with communication, and I think if it wasn't for Chief Johnson, we wouldn't be seeing this report right now, so I want to thank you. But I don't like the fact that when I read this report, I saw things in it that kind of made our district look bad. And that's why they did not want to release the report. Numbers were not provided to them. Budgets were not provided in a usable format. And I see no evidence that it was ever provided. So I really hope we can move forward from this and not have this ever happen again. A huge waste of our tax dollars. Huge waste. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? No? Yes.
So just wanted to take a quick minute today because it's not on the agenda to talk. As we talked briefly before the meeting, we did have the Bonanza fire yesterday in our neighboring community, and wanted to at least give an update. We're at 181 acres, 40% contained as of 7 o'clock tonight. But what it did do yesterday is it highlighted a couple of things. We've spent some time in here talking about mutual aid. And what does that look like? And why do we participate in mutual aid? We have that fire in Cameron Park. We are not going to handle it with two fire engines that we have here. Both of our engines out of Cameron Park were on that fire for a considerable amount of time. So we had an El Dorado Hills engine covering our district yesterday, along with an engine that came from Sac Metro Fire Department down in the Sacramento area that came up and covered our district. We had a Folsom engine that came in and covered El Dorado Hills as the El Dorado Hills moved up to here. So it really highlighted what the California mutual aid process is, why we use it. We, on that fire yesterday, we had five strike teams of engines. So that's five engines plus a leader that came from out of our unit, came from as far as Butte, Tehama County, Tuolumne County, Placer County, to come in and assist. We had every local engine in the county on the incident yesterday. Multiple hand crews, multiple air tankers, multiple helicopters to combat. It really shows the total force of the fire service. We had five engines that came out of San Joaquin County from local fire agencies and a strike team that came up. They were on the fire all day today. They'll be released tonight. But it really highlights the mutual aid process and why we participate in it, why it's here, and to show that a simple phone call to our partners in Sacramento brought an engine up, one of their on-duties from out of their fire stations up to cover Cameron Park. So we didn't go without service here within the community while we were supporting our neighbors two exits up, really. Then with that, we've talked a lot about the partnership and the partnership that's been renewed between the fire department and the CSD. Last night I called general manager and said, hey, what's your CSD look like for tomorrow morning? I need to, can we use it to do our morning briefing? So we had over 30 fire engines here. We had six of our hand crews here this morning that came through for a briefing first thing this morning in the main hall. The new AV worked out amazing. We were able to put our map of the fire up on the big screen. It went to every TV around. After we do our big briefing, we break out to each individual division and give specific instructions to the crews that are going out to the line. They were able to stand in front of the TV, talk over the map, what the plan was for today, how they were going to do that. We're able to feed all the crews out of here, give them ice, water, Gatorade, lunches, breakfast. Was all served out of the CSD. The crews that came off the line came through here. They got the same stuff out of here. And by 10 o'clock, I think we had everybody out on the fire line and off of the fire line. But I can tell you that would not have happened in prior without the partnership that we have. And we are very thankful for that. To be able to get the folks off the line and get the new crews back out on the line in a quick manner. They were able to get out of the elements that they were going to spend for the next 24 hours in the heat today out there to at least come in, get some air conditioning. The folks that have been out there all night were able to do the same, but it was a very fast and efficient process being able to use the CSD, and that was a really huge help to us to be able to do that in and out real quick. Just so you all know, this gentleman here came in at 5 a.m. this morning to unlock the doors for our logs folks to make sure they were set up. Had the AV running and that, but a huge help, and I cannot thank the board enough for the continued support when we do have these emergencies locally, because as we do have them, we rely on each other to be able to effectively manage the incident. We will have engines out on the fire through tonight. We will have a whole nother batch of engines going back out on the incident tomorrow and probably for the day after. Ultimate goal is to get it wrapped up as quick as possible. We do have red flag warnings on the east side of the unit in Alpine County, the Tahoe Basin, and the Carson Ranger District on that side. And then this weekend, we're coming back into a potential red flag warning in the valley side for high winds, high temperatures, and low humidities. So it's really important for us to get this wrapped up before we have to ship resources all over. But in a matter of 2 hours, we had an additional 30 fire engines that came in, six different helicopters, extra crews. We had hand crews that came out of Lake Napa area, hand crews that came out of Tehama down to support us, all within a short amount of time to really contain a fire that that area has had no fire history in it since the 1950s. Wow. So that worries us when we look that far back with no history and the amount of fuel loading that's in there. So to stop it at 181 acres, I feel very fortunate that we were able to do that yesterday with very minimal loss to structures and that. Had it gone a little farther, we would have had a major disaster. But it comes back to the total force, just not the fire department, but the community as a whole working together. And I can't thank you all enough for the support. Being able to make a quick phone call last night, have the facility opened up. We tried to minimize the impact to the kids' camp this morning, but they were super excited to see all the folks out there.
That was a plus.
They were coming in. We do understand it's an impact, but to be able to get the folks in and get a briefing very early in the morning and get them out to relieve the folks that have spent the whole night out in the fire is really important. Here was a great location because it's short drive time to the fire in a big space, and we had enough room to park everything. So I just want to say thank you and then give you the update.
Thank you for that, Chief. Thank you.
All right. That's awesome. Thank you.
So just one comment. So there were some comments made earlier. I mean, certainly appreciate all the comments, and you guys have been great to work with. But I also want to make sure that credit is given where credit is due. And so this board, I think, is owed kudos, especially for me. When you ask me to step in as your interim general manager, that is by far the number one priority you gave me, and that was to work on all of the backlog of our PRAs, including the Triton report and some of those things. So I do want to make sure they get credit because they gave me direction to how do we do this, let's get us there, and we work together to do that. So they are listening. The other thing that was a high priority, the highest priority, was transparency and restoring the relationships here in the community. And so the board should get kudos for listening. And so for me, it's about day four. I know a lot of things have happened in the past, and we are working very hard. When I say we, our team, are working very hard to look into the future, drive this agency in the future. But this board is listening to you. They've made some great changes. They're very supportive of being transparent and doing what's right in the public's eye. So I just wanted to make sure that that moment wasn't missed for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to the consent calendar, and I believe we have an item we wanted to possibly pull.
Yes, Madam President, we would like to pull the revised public salary schedule, item number 8.
Okay, so pull item 8 and pull for discussion or remove?
Pull.
Discussion.
Okay, so, and move it where? Item 1?
Yeah, I think you can move that to... under review, pulled, yes.
Oh, hello, right? Okay, yeah.
After 8, so it'd be
okay,
8.
So,
thank you, Nikki.
So pull item 8, and is there anything else on the consent calendar, or is there a motion? Actually, do I have to? I should take this out to the public, correct? Do we have any public comments on the consent calendar? Okay, seeing none, do we have a motion?
I move that we approve the consent calendar with the movement of 8 to be pulled to.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
I will second.
All right, and we need a roll call on this.
All right. Director Wolfson?
Aye.
Director Gilchrist?
Aye.
Director Bazette?
Aye.
Director Scobie?
Aye.
And Director Israel?
You're on mute.
Aye. Yeah.
Okay. Motion passes. So the consent calendar is approved with item 8 moved to... items pulled for discussion, so we will now open item 8 for discussion.
Okay, just a thought on item 8. That really is related to an MOU adjustment. The MOU was approved some time ago, and it called for a CPI adjustment. However, we have several employees that are not covered under they're not represented employees. And so we wanted to make sure that the public salary schedule is reflective of the same CPI adjustment across all of those positions, so we want to have that discussion on the board and make sure that we include that as part of the salary schedule adjustment.
Okay. Comments from the board or questions from the board?
I think it's appropriate to apply to all employees, not just the union employees.
I concur.
And I believe you said it was $12,000.
That is correct. It's $12,255.
Per year, correct?
Per year. That is correct. For all.
All right. Anybody else with questions on item 8? Taking it out to the public. Do we have any public comment regarding item 8? Yes.
Does this cover Tom?
Tom, he does. He's an unrepresented employee. It would cover him as well.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Do we have any other public comment regarding item 8? Okay. Bringing it back to the board. Does this require a motion?
Let's say a motion.
Okay. Do we have any more discussion or do we have a motion?
I make a motion to approve the revised public salary schedule applying to all employees.
I'll second that motion.
All right. Can we have a roll call on it?
Yes. Sorry, taking notes too. Director Wilson.
Aye.
Director Gilchrist.
Aye.
Director Bazet.
Aye.
Director Scobie.
Aye.
And Director Israel.
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay.
Okay, we are moving on to general business. Item number 9, public hearing and approval of resolution 2025-09, establishing appropriations limit for fiscal year 25-26.
All
right. Go ahead.
We have to open the hearing.
We have to, okay. Public hearing is opened.
All right, so every year we get information from the county, and they basically do a cost of living factor to be able to change our appropriations limits. And it looks like for the 25-26 year, it's calculated on a basis of the prior year's limit by the growth factor. And the change in the cost of living factor has been reported to be 6.44%. Which is an increase of 0.09%. So we went from 1.0644, we multiplied that by 1009, and we got to 1.0654. And our new appropriation limit for 25-26 is set to be $15,442,497.45.
Okay, is there any, are there any questions from the board? Okay. All right. Do we have any public comment regarding resolution 2025-09, the appropriations limits? Okay. Seeing none, bringing it back to the board. And do we have any further discussion? I need to close the hearing
close
and
the
then.
Hearing.
Okay. Public hearing is closed, and do we have a motion?
I move the resolution establishing the appropriations limitation for fiscal 2025-26 for Cameron Park Community Service District be approved. The resolution is attachment 98. And do we need to read it? Or we waive the reading?
If you would like to waive the reading, you'd say that.
The reading as well.
Okay.
All right.
I will second that.
Okay. Could we have a roll call, please?
Director Wilson?
Aye.
Director Gilchrist?
Aye.
Director Bazet?
Aye.
Director Scobie?
Aye.
And Director Israel?
Aye.
Motion passes. Moving on to item 10, which is not a public hearing. Approved resolution 2025-10, approving the form of and authorizing the execution of the MOU and authorizing participation in the Special District Risk Management Authority's Health Benefit Program.
Okay. So during the union negotiations, part of the new MOU was that by January 2026, we established an employee assistance program. So this is a resolution authorizing the general manager to sign the MOU to move forward with the employee assistance program for full-time employees.
All right. Do we have any questions from the board?
What is entailed with the employee assistance program? What kind of services?
It's mental health services, legal services. There's a number of things that it helps.
PTSD.
Okay.
An 800 number.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. All right, thank you.
Any other questions from the board?
What's the cost per employee?
$13 a month per employee.
13?
Yes.
13, was that correct?
Yes, 13.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, seeing none, taking it out to the public. Do we have any public comment regarding the employee assistance program, the health benefits program? Okay, seeing none, bringing it back to the board, is there any further discussion or do we have a motion?
We approve resolution 2025-10 approving the form of and authorizing the execution of the MOU and authorizing participation in the Special District Risk Management Authority Health Benefits Program. And I waive reading of the resolution.
All one breath.
All right, so do we have a roll call, please?
Director Wilson.
Yes.
Director Gilchrist.
Aye.
Director Bazette.
Aye.
Director Scobie.
Aye.
And Director Israel.
I think he's eating.
He's maybe. Oh, he's muted.
I can't hear you, Tim.
Motion passes.
Motion passes.
Okay. Moving on to item 11. Approve resolution 2025-12, directing preparation of the annual engineer's report for landscaping and lighting districts for the fiscal year 2025 and 26.
Members of the board, bringing an item forward, it is, as just read off, a declaration of the intent to continue landscape and lighting assessment districts, also to approve the preliminary engineer's report for those LLADs, and then to provide, authorize for us to provide a notice of a public hearing. This won't be the public hearing. The public hearing will be held at next month's board meeting. Essentially, this is a ministerial function. We just need your authorization to proceed through these steps. The preliminary engineer's report is attached to this. I will just highlight that there is one change to one of the assessment districts where the assessment level has gone down from the prior year. Otherwise, there are no changes to the assessments. Most of these, as you know, are lighting only, and so we're just basically carrying those assessments forward at the same level, and quite frankly, some of them are already capped. There is notices of the cost of living increases for various, each LLAD has a maximum that it can increase, and so those are all noted in the engineer's report. So with your approval, we can proceed down the step. At the next meeting, we'll bring you the final engineer's report. We'll have the public hearing, and then ultimately you'll approve the assessments for these landscape lighting assessment districts. Happy
Thank
to answer
you.
Any questions.
Any questions from the board regarding this item?
Not really a question, but a comment. It's such lovely reading, very sad. You need to go to sleep at night. I was disappointed to see that there are several LLADs, and I know we're going to talk about this in the budget, but there are several LLADs that the general fund is covering. So I'd like to see that we get a plan to
sure.
move
yeah. And that's one of the things. I know the board has given staff direction to go out to RFP, new company engineering firm. This is a one-year agreement. They're getting this one done. We'll go out to RFP for a new firm to look at that. It'll be the perfect opportunity for us to look at exactly what we need to do for each LLAD. I will tell you, Mark's done just an amazing job finding out exactly where we're at, where our staff costs are associated or allocated to the LLADs. And so that's only going to get better and better and better. It's going to take a little bit of time to dig us out of that, though.
My question is, what if they're underfunded? What is the process? How do we proceed as a board?
Well, the board would have some options, and staff should be bringing those forward to you. I just want to make sure I have a more complete picture before we do that. You can decide to cut back services. If it's a landscaping district, you can decide to mow twice a month rather than every week. I mean, there are certain variables we have. Fortunately or unfortunately, as the case may be, a lot of these are lighting, and it's driven by the cost of electricity, over which we don't have much control. Those, I will tell you as a preview, I am actively engaged with Representative PG&E looking at these lights, which ones have been converted to LED, which ones have not. So, but let's say that for, because it's a much more detailed conversation. But in some of these, we don't have a lot of levers we can pull because it's lighting, and it's the cost of the lights.
Okay, thank you.
I might add that when we get to that point, like Mark indicated, we might have to go back out to that LLAD, the owners with that LLAD, and they have an option to increase that assessment, but they would have to vote on that. They'd have to initiate that. And if they don't want to or it doesn't get approved, then we would have to make a decision at that point whether we're turning off the lights or those kinds of things. There's other steps to take, but we're not there yet.
All right. Any other questions from the board? Seeing none, taking it out to the public. Do we have any public comment? Yes.
When you talk about cutting back services, you wouldn't do that before you reached out to the residents in those areas.
Oh, right? Absolutely. No,
right.
Yeah, okay. That's just one of the levers. And, you know, and the other lever is going back out to them and saying, okay, here's where we are financially. Do you want to increase? But that would be a Prop 218 vote. And that's a whole lot of kettle.
Oh, I don't know what my area is called on the step of it. Those streetlights, half of them, they don't even work. So,
you get that lot,
which, you know, I don't really care if they work or not. I know
well, the good news is if they're not working, there's no electricity.
And some of them are yellow.
Yeah.
Those are possible. Yeah. The decision was made to cut back there already. Or
There was an initiative, and Mark's tracking this down too. There was an initiative where they were upgrading all the lights to LED, but as we found out, we are not remotely near where we thought we were with conversion of those. So that should help.
Yeah. All right. Yes, in the back.
This has been a reason I've come to a lot of meetings, and I remember seeing the engineer delivering the report. Mm-hmm. And I cannot justify why we have this when, since I've lived in Cameron Park, we've had the same ugly lights that are surrounded, the light box is surrounded with spider webs. There's no improvement. The first time, I think, I'd like to know what the fee is for the engineering report. The first time, I believe it was $5,000. The next time, I don't know that it was the very next year, but it went up to $15,000. I don't know how accurate I am with that, but that's my understanding. So if you add up what all the districts pay in their property tax for lighting and landscaping. We have no landscaping. The lighting is, we'd be better off just eliminating. And this doesn't even come close to what we're paying for the engineering report. So I'm just mystified about the whole thing. And I hope we get either decent lights or get rid of this thing.
Yes.
I'm kind of personally involved in the lake and the way it looks. And
one of the things I think is very sad is the lights. I went around with a bar, 2 foot bar level, hanging plumb against the poles, took pictures of all of it, sent it to Mike Grassley some three, 4 years ago. And 29 degrees out of plumb is radically off the average. There are 4 lights around the lake that actually turn on, the first 4 from the entrance on the west side. For some reason, those 4 work, and none of the others work. I don't know if they're electrified. I'm guessing they're probably not electrified. I'd really like to see them removed. Now, the poles look to be in pretty good shape. You can give it back to PG&E for the neighborhood and put these in somewhere where they might be appreciated. But we don't use them. Well, we're obviously not using them on the lakes. They don't work at all, except the first 4. And I think we could live without those, personally. I would like to see all of them disappear. End of comment.
All right. Thank you so much. Any other public comment about the LEDs? Yes.
Graphic Bowman, Cameron Park. I've been trying to locate where these surplus funds are documented. Are they in the estimate of cost document?
Surplus funds.
Well, some LEDs have a surplus of funds.
Yeah, they have a fund balance.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Surplus. I'm trying to analyze what that is and where it's documented. Because in the engineer's report, there are statements made to possibly do improvements. My assumption is they want to use the surplus fund balance to do those improvements. Maybe the residents don't want to do the improvements and want a reduction in what's being taken from them or charged to them. So where can I find that?
Although the fund balances are...
Page 40.
Sorry?
Page 40.
That's where I'm looking. Tell me which line item is...
Very last line.
It says
estimated
number of parcels, cost per parcel, and lights. Estimated fund balance. That's the...
That's the
reserve or the...
That's the fund balance.
Okay. All right. So $50,000, that's a lot of money. Okay. Thanks.
Depending on what is required of the LLED, sometimes it's not just lights. It is landscaping and other things.
Yeah.
So irrigation control valves and those things from time to time do need to be replaced. And so that's why you do have a fund balance. Then you'll have to replace those items, and that balance goes down. So, yeah.
But to make those kind of decisions, you need to know what the last 5 to 10 years of replacements have taken place to then budget for that. So. 50.
I know this is not normally a time for discussion, but exactly, Brad, you're spot on. And what has been missing has been the current, it's called a Browning Reserve Study, where that study goes back and it looks at the history of the assets, not only in the district, but of the district general. And we know what's old, what's getting older. I mean, I can tell you right now. But But no, you're spot on. That just, we just need to get time to get that information together.
All right.
Next step.
All right. Thank you.
Just because I've been on the board a long time, I experience this.
Yeah.
Eastside Park, we actually met with them several times.
Eastside Park?
Eastwood. Yeah. And they had a certain surplus. And a whole lot of range of ideas were done to improve that park. I mean, don't think of that. That's not just lighting, but it's a whole park. And a lot of really clever, creative ideas. They really didn't want too many changes, but they wanted some pruning of trees and a new picnic table put in, something like that. So we've actually done that historically.
Okay.
And that was a good example, I think, where they had a fund balance that they could use for all kinds of other things, and that was not their desire.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Any other public comment?
Not really.
All right. So bringing it back to the board, any further discussion or do we have a motion? And what does the motion need to be? Because I heard we need to bring it back next month for a public hearing.
Yeah, so you'll declare the intention to continue the assessments. You'll approve the preliminary engineer's report, which you have before you in this packet, and then you'll direct staff to provide a notice for the public hearing at the July board meeting.
hypothetical in the resolution.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution 2025-12, directing preparation of the annual engineer's report for landscaping and lighting districts for the fiscal year 2025-26, waiving the reading of the resolution.
And directing a public hearing for next month, correct?
Yes.
It's in the resolution.
And directing a public hearing for next month.
I will second that lengthy motion.
Could we have the roll call, please?
Director Wolfson?
Aye.
Director Gilchrist?
Aye.
Director Bazette?
Aye.
Director Scobie?
Aye.
And Director Israel?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. And now we move on to item 12, opening the public hearing. Public hearing and approval of resolution 2025-13, adopting the Cameron Park Community Services District fiscal year 2025-26 preliminary budget.
That's me. I'll kick us off, and then I'm sure we've got our entire team here, and they'll chime in in their respective parts if need be. But first, I want to start off by thanking our executive team here. It's been a process. As you might see, this is completely different than what we've had in the past. And so to do something like this takes a lot of time, energy, and effort, blood, sweat, tears, maybe a little screaming. So
Head banging.
It took a lot of that. So this isn't done by one person. This is done by an entire team. We've got Chief Martin here, Chief Cowan, who's not here with us, Chief Blankenheim. There's been lots of conversations, and so it wasn't done in a vacuum. So I just want to acknowledge everybody for their support and getting this done in their parts. I do think it's a really good document. But I will also tell you that we're not perfect. And so after reviewing this probably 10,000 times, I found a couple more things again this morning. And so this document, I will tell you, will continue to get better and better and better. The purpose and intent of this budget format, if you will, was to really have more of a descriptive budget. It was to tell a story. It was to allow the lay person or citizen to pick up the document, look at something, and go, okay, I know what that is. I know what that means, because if you look in the back, there's a glossary that tells you exactly what every GL code means, what kind of goes into that code. And so I think that's very helpful. I think sometimes that we all see it all day long, all the time. We know what it means, and we forget that the community or the citizens might not know what X means. And so that's why we have more of a descriptive budget. It is also very big, because we want them to tell their story. So every department has a narrative, and that tells you a little bit about that department. And then it also tells you some of the important changes within their respective departments. There's also a letter, and that's really kind of a letter from the general manager and team that talks about some of the significant changes or assumptions. And so, yes, I know it's a too long of a letter, and we'll work on reducing that in the future, but there's a lot of good information that's in there. There's also some redundancy that's in here. So, yes, you're going to see a couple things a few times. So the intent wasn't to walk through every single page. We had a really good budget workshop, but certainly if there's any questions, let's talk about that. So as I go, I'll walk through this, and then I'll highlight some of the items that we caught in another review. I think your brain sees things and it automatically fixes it. So there you go. So on page two, it really starts with some of the operational highlights for fiscal year 26 that we hope to accomplish. This was a really good conversation at the board workshop with respect to prioritizing the items. So you'll see 11 items that are on that page, and we took a swag at moving those to more of an appropriate priority. So item number two, complete critical pool infrastructure repairs, including the pool pump replacement and tile replacement. And I can tell you that we made massive steps forward on that. That's actually going to be completed in this current year's budget and then finalized in next year's budget. So the pump is actually here on site. Kudos to Mark, and I know Clarissa, they scoured everywhere because that pump is obsolete. And so that pump had to be, they had to find parts and then actually build it, and here it is today. So it's out there and it only weighs about 700 pounds, so we're looking for some strong people. So we'll get that in place. We're going to wait for a day that we can get that implemented where it won't impact the pool, which obviously impacts revenue coming into the organization. Implementing a new recreation and facilities management solution. Staff has reviewed our current solution. As you all know, we've had some significant challenges there. It's a legacy system, and we can't really get the data that we need to make informed decisions, one. And two is it does not allow for us to capture the credit card or bank fees, and that's something we will be accomplishing with this new system as well. Item number three is explore funding options for critical deferred maintenance items such as pool plaster, replacement pool deck repairs, and then lake infrastructure. There's a lot of those, and I think you will read through this document, you'll see a trend, and that trend is you'll hear us say no less than 10 times that deferred maintenance we know is an issue. And so you'll see in the budget this year and every year, we look to tackle some of those items, but we do need to in the future start looking at other ways to get additional funding to accelerate that process a little bit. So that's important. I'm going to pause here quick just to highlight also that we understand we have deferred maintenance. And so, as you heard Mark talk about earlier, the Browning Reserve, that is something within this budget that we've talked about doing again. I think our last one, Mark, was 10 years ago or so, maybe a little bit longer. So we're hoping to update that, which is going to help us inform what we need to be putting aside in future years for replacement. Comprehensive review of cost recovery goals and methodology, again, with the legacy system that we have. I know it sounds bad, but I'll say it. It's very difficult to determine what programs are fully cost recovered, what programs are not recovering their costs. We are working very hard to do that. This new system will allow us to do just that and not as much staff time to try to figure it out. So we will be reviewing all of our programs, and if there's a significant community benefit, well, then there's a decision that, okay, well, how much from the general fund do we allocate for that? Do we keep that program? Some of our senior programs, there's not a revenue stream necessarily that comes in for that, but that's a great community or significant community benefit. And so there's a general fund allocation that comes in to assist with that. So we'll be reviewing all of our programs and basing it off of that. Finishing the design and approval process for the pickleball complex located at or near Krista McCullough Park. That's something we've been talking about for some time. We do have some park impact funds. We do have some Quimby funds. We'll talk about that in a minute. Those are things that we want to continue to move down the path, and Mark has been working very hard on that. We have talked to an individual who works for an engineering firm, and they're looking at our options, and so we'll have something to take to the Parks and Recreation Committee here very soon. Explore the implementation of a volunteer program in the community and use creative ways to support some of the potentially the struggling or financially underfunded LLEDs. That might be an option for us. Maybe we're going to look at that. One of the other things that we've discussed also is like at Cameron Park Lake, having a park host program so they can help us lock up, they can help us unlock, they can help give information to community members out there, maybe even do some light cleaning and things like that. And in exchange, they might have their fifth wheel or RV that's on site for a period of time to assist. So we're looking at that. In addition to that, having volunteers here on site. Aaron gets really, really busy at the front, especially this time of year. We'll have a line of people out the door trying to get in to go swimming or pickleball or one of the mini camps that we had. And we had three camps in one day going the other day. Can you believe that? But having volunteers to help with that is helpful. And then also having volunteers out in the courtyard for a couple reasons. One is just another set of eyes on the kiddos, because there's a lot of children running around to make sure nobody's going out in the parking lot. No one with nefarious behavior coming into the center. And then also directing parents on where to go, where there's check-in. This is where the pool is. This is where the gym is. As they're running through, where's the restroom? Here's where that is. And so we're hoping volunteers will be able to help with that. Creating a comprehensive programming plan for Cameron Park Lake. As you've heard me say multiple times, we're kind of at a crossroad on where to go with that. I do think that we should just have some community meetings and discuss with the community where do we want to go, not only with Cameron Park Lake, but with all of our parks and programs. I think it's a good time to do that, and that the perfect time to do that is in the next one, number eight, which is updating our district strategic plan, which is due in 2026. We should start planning for that now, since it's a perfect year. And then also our Nexus study and our reserve studies, our Browning Reserve studies, like you heard Mark talking about. So that's also a priority. Number nine, continued exploration of annexing additional land within our district sphere of influence. We've identified some land that's in our district sphere of influence. However, we didn't annex that, and development has occurred and is still occurring, which essentially means we're not collecting the revenue from those. However, their service is being provided. And so we want to turn that around, fix that, incorporate that into our district. Mark and I has already had a conversation with LAFCO. We're going to start that process. We have a new ad hoc committee that will be addressing that as well. And then obviously we've got the Lime Rock and Marble Valley projects. We've got the Town and Country Village projects, and we'll be looking at all those impacts and effects on the center, on the district, which has an impact on the revenue here as well. Well, we also will be working with EDSO on conducting a security assessment of the community center. I do think that's a high priority. I know we have some known risk, and we want to make sure we're doing everything to counter those. That includes some enhancements, such as our check-in process, and so we'll talk more about that as we go through. Continue the Recreation Department introduction of new programs, review existing programs, and then solicit the community input to improve the programs that we have today, what works, what's not working, and so we're hoping to move that forward. With that, I'm going to pause just for a second.
Yeah, because I was going to throw something at you. Please. Anyway. I was wondering, especially given the fire map and everything, yeah, I don't want to get accused of abuse.
No, you're good.
Because the fire map and everything, should weed abatement be on that list, or do you have it somewhere else in there?
Yeah, so weed abatement's part of the budget. There's a position that we've been talking about, and I know there'll be some discussion on that. So I don't know. We can put that as part of this list, but it's already in the budget for conversation. But whatever the pleasure of the board, we can do that as well. Do you want a line in there on it? Or
I'd like to expand on that. Exploring assessment options for our fire service is something we've discussed, and we're not really hitting it here on this list. I think that should be on it, specifically on it.
That is actually covered in this. We talked specifically on that, and that's adding or looking at other cost recovery goals and methodology. We did talk about that specifically. So that's going to be looking at...
I won't specifically say it here. I think we should have a very specific item in here to explore an assessment for fire. Or fire and parks, but we need to continue to go down that path. We don't have the revenue to continue providing services the way we are.
Understand. I'll just state that is exactly what that statement is. That's exactly what we're doing. And then to say that it's going to be a fire or parks is premature. But I do think that we need to continue to look for funding opportunities, including benefit assessments, tax initiative. We need to be looking at all that. I think this document does spell that out and say that. But
is that
what
item 3?
It's number 4.
4.
Okay, number 4.
Because it fits 3, yeah. It too.
And 3 hits that.
Yeah,
3 hits that as well.
Yeah, that's way too big for the magnitude of the problem it is.
No. I personally, when I read 4, I think of a potential assessment going to the LLED,
yes.
The underfunded LLED. It's the greater scheme of what are we going to do for cost savings and cost recovery.
Right.
That's how I read it, but if someone would like a couple more words, then they can certainly do that.
Up to the board.
Regarding wildfire, the weed abatement, I agree based on tonight's presentation and Chief's comment that we are going to be responsible for enforcing the defensible space in the red area. We saw very well on that map, so I do think we probably should add.
Okay.
My personal opinion. I don't know if other board members have the same opinion.
I see this as kind of a priority list to some way.
Yes.
And I guess that's what I'm thinking, I'm hearing from you, is that it should be on a priority list and probably pretty high.
Okay. We will put that
one
in.
And maybe with some specific language, simply because this was eye-opening tonight, this presentation, you know.
Don't disagree. And that falls right in alignment with 3 because obviously it's a new position, so funding streams, it falls right in alignment with that. So I agree. Okay. All right. I will take you. So first, I do want to start with saying that this is a balanced budget. And so we did take some time the other day to celebrate internally, knowing that, yes, it's a balanced budget, but we also know that there's a long road ahead. And there's a lot of things to do still. So I think that was important, you know, for us to have that moment and know that. So when we look back to fiscal year 24, you know, we approved, you know, preliminary budget with a deficit of $503,000. In fiscal year 25, you know, a deficit initially of $620,000. This one is a fully cost recovered, if you will, or a zero balance budget. So I want to acknowledge that. All right. Go to, this would be page 7. One of the new things you'll see, it wasn't very clear as our team was discussing. I know we've had a lot of conversations at previous board meetings about what are the fund balances. And so we created this sheet that has all of our fund balances and where they're at. And I just saw another typo there. Wonderful. And to keep finding them. So this sheet's really good. The top half really talks about your unrestricted funds or your designated funds, which is to say that, you know, your general reserve fund, which is your operating balance or your cash balance, you can use those funds. And we use those funds for a lot of this, the operations of the district. When you look at your Parks and Recreation Reserve Fund, that is something, it's new that we're establishing. It's a reserve fund. Right, so that's going to cover your capital. That's going to cover, you know, some of your deferred maintenance and those items within that. There's not a lot of, funding that's in those, but that's something that we need to look at once we get the Browning Reserve study done. That's going to let us know if this is your deferred maintenance. This is the capital that needs to be put aside for a generator that's going to be replaced 10 years from now, or an air conditioner that's going to be replaced 15 years from now. That is a number that we'll have. It doesn't necessarily mean, because I guarantee it's going to be a big number. We're not going to have that big number, but we need to acknowledge that in the budget, and there's a couple spots in here where it'll specifically tell you we're working on the Browning Reserve study to, you know, inform us of what those numbers, true numbers are. As it is today, it will be just giving you a swag. It will be thought that might be. That's why we need to do the study. With respect to...
So on this reserve fund balance, you've got the Parks and Rec Reserve Fund, Fire Department Reserve Fund.
Yes.
If we approve this preliminary budget, are we also approving the designation of these reserve funds?
Yeah, and so some of them are designations and others you have. We just termed them a little bit different so it stands out a little bit more. So, for instance, you know, your Park and Recreation Reserve Fund, we've had Fund 80 and 82. One was a settlement fund that we had for some of the yep. building, as you remember.
Yep.
And the other one, help me remember, 81, 80?
80 was the Parks Reserve.
The Parks Reserve. And so we really want to bring those together. We're calling it Parks and Recreation Reserve. So, yes, by adopting this, that's what we're going to call it. That's what you'll see in the budgets going forward.
But your 70K is not included in there. You're at 59,000. So is the 70K still sitting out?
It is, but there was a negative balance in the other one, which offset, and then some Prop 68 funds that came in.
This is inclusive of moving...
Both of those together, correct, yes. So the Park Reserve, the Fire Department Reserve Fund, you'll remember is your old Fund 7. And so, you know, when we talk about revenue coming in, and I'll talk about that one in a second, that's when all your fire equipment rental revenue that comes into the general fund. We know really good exactly what our engine costs are going to be down the road. We have a spreadsheet we keep track of. Chief and I, we talk about those. I ask him, you know, what's the cost of a battalion chief's vehicle? What do you think the cost of a fire engine is going to be, you know, this year? Those kinds of things. And then that drives what the cost is going to be, say, 15 years from now when we have to replace an engine. And then there's a number on the far right side that tells us this is how much money you should be putting aside on an annual basis. That number this year for the capital replacement plan was $129,000 per year and some change, and that's what we're reflecting and transferring over, and you'll see that reflected there. So those are designated funds. They're not restricted. They're designated. I would recommend in the future that this board look at adopting, and we'll bring some language forward, a policy where that's where it is, and then you really need a supermajority vote of the board to move funds or to change where funds go. I just think that's the best practice I think we need to look at down the line, and we'll help with that. If you look at the next section down below, this is your restricted funds. And these are funds that have a very specific purpose, and most of the time it's dictated by law. And so your Park Impact Fee Fund or your AB 1600, when you look at that, you can only really use that for your parks, and that has to be due to new development. So you can't use that to do deferred maintenance. You can't use that for an existing park to fix something there. That has to be for new items. We can, however, use those to enhance existing parks. So if you want to put something new there that's tied to new growth or increased usage due to new growth, and clearly we don't have a ton of new growth, but we have an impact coming from some of the other growth around us, especially in our major centers, which are here, and then also at the lake. Those are the two main impact areas, if you will, from outside of Cameron Park. So we could do a shade structure here. We could do things like that here, a slide. Those are new things that would be allowable, and so we'll be exploring those with you as well. Yes, it was late when I wrote it. It's fire impact fee, not fire and pace fee. So I caught that today. So that is that again is to offset the impacts on fire, future fire, but you can't use those funds necessarily to buy a new fire engine. Depends on your Nexus study, and we will be updating our Nexus study as stated in the budget. And with that, I think there is a portion that we want to be able to use. I know some agencies you can use up to 25-26%. It just has to be spelled out in your Nexus study that you can use 25% of a new engine's cost could be taken from these funds, as long as it's due to the impacts and effect of new growth or new responses tied to it. Yes, ma'am.
So typically a fund balance has a date associated with it. Is this the beginning of the fiscal year, the end of the fiscal year? And it'd be nice to add that for future
reference. We can absolutely do that.
And what is it?
What are your forecasts for those? You said they fell off the sheet.
Yes, some are fairly easy to get a number like that. Others are harder because you don't know what growth is, so we can make a projection, and that might tell you, you know, what you're going to get on your fire and your parks impact. So I think we need a little more time to figure out how to project what that's going to look like. Your Quimby funds, that is really meant for, like, land purchases for new parks. You can't do that for anything. You can't buy, and we looked at all these things. We talked about can we buy land for a new fire station? You cannot. Even if a park is on that property, you still can't do that. So we're exploring that one a little bit more. You can buy that for new parks, and that might be something if we look at Krista, a pickleball, you know, venue over in that area, that might be something that we can use, not at the park, but next to the park or something like that, as long as it's new. And then obviously the economic uncertainty reserve, that's really a combination of two. There was two funds. One was the economic uncertainty reserve. The other one was the stabilization fund. Stabilization fund was about $65,000, and your economic uncertainty reserve was $400,000. These are restricted. And these are, specially held. I think what we want to do is put those two together and just call it all economic uncertainty reserve, if that works for the board. $65,000 is not a ton of money. One and two, they both are kind of doing the same thing.
So,
yes, sir.
Question: We're purchasing a brand new fire engine.
Yes.
And I know the delivery really has been delayed, but where is the funding for that showing up here?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've been having some really good conversations with Ken, our special finance consultant. And at that time, it looks like we're going to be over a year, Chief Light. It looks like next fiscal year probably. So we will look at whether it makes sense for us to, purchase or do a finance option, because having our cash staying in the bank, if we're collecting more, then it might make more sense for us to keep our cash making more money and having a payment on that for a couple of years. We're doing that right now in Engine 88. And so we'll continue to look at that at that time. But that'll likely be in next year's fiscal budget.
So there will be an item here somewhere.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Next year, if we get a VIN number and they tell us that, hey, your delivery date is X and it falls in fiscal year 27, that's when you'll see us put that in that budget. And we'll decide at that time, based on interest rates and those kind of things, whether it's a flat-out purchase or whether we're going to finance that. Okay. So that is that. I want to just call out this other one. If you look down in the very bottom, fiscal year 25 under total restricted funds, there's a couple versions that went out, and I missed a cell where it didn't capture everything. So that number should be $3,814,756. And not, if you have one, this is 1.9, that is incorrect. I just wanted to call that one out. All right.
Mo, I guess I'm not really clear on these funds. We have forecasts for some of them. Some of them we don't. I'm not quite sure why we couldn't forecast on the other funds. I think it'd be really helpful for 2026 to show what we plan to transfer into those funds and what will be taken out. Then that gives you the total for the forecast. But right now, I look at this, I'm like, well, so how much money are we putting in our reserve fund?
Gotcha.
For a fire department reserve, for example. I'm not sure because it's not clear to me what's been taken out.
Gotcha. No, great point. I think we can certainly clarify that. We can add probably to the initial management letter that talks about the capital a little bit more and what's going to that. And then as for the forecast, you're right. We just want to make, we didn't want to take swags at anything. We wanted to base it on something. And so I'll work with the team and we'll see what's the best way with Ken as well. What's the best way to forecast some of those other ones? And we'll come back with what that methodology is and probably for final.
Yeah, I mean, the general fund should be the same, right? I would hope. I mean, if we did our jobs perfectly, it would be the same, right?
Yeah, like I said, we're trying to be as accurate as possible, but we can look for ways to forecast that as well. All right. Okay, I promise I'm going to stop talking here pretty soon. Just a couple small things on page 18. We try to be consistent throughout the document, found a couple more, so we're moving from 25, 26. It's kind of all over the place. Just to fiscal year 26. I noticed that's how it is in the audit, so we're just going to clean that up. So at the top, at the very top, it says fiscal year 25-26. That's going to be FY 26 or fiscal year 26. And then the same thing down at the very last paragraph on the bottom under wages and benefits. It says FY 2026. It'll be FY 26. So we're still working and cleaning those up. I promise you, moving forward, we'll have a cleaner document. Same thing on page 19 under health insurances. That'll be FY 26. You can see that some of our costs have gone slightly up when it comes to personnel, but a lot of them have actually gone down. You know, when we look at dental insurance, you know, 26.88% decrease. There's a decrease in vision insurance. And so, you know, we got another message today. We had somebody drop off health care, and I believe that number was going to be, what, close to $7,000 or $8,000. You know, I know that doesn't sound like a lot of money, but it is with our budget. So we're going to start to see some of those continue to go down, and obviously we'll watch what health care insurance does and what the impact's going to be. What you're going to see on that very next page, this will look similar but different to you. And so it says fund run roll-up. This is going to be your general operating budget. All of the revenue lines are now in your general fund. And part of the challenge was when you looked at what we've done in the past is we've had property taxes in every one of the department budgets. Well, there's not necessarily anything that comes from the auditors that says this is what you're going to get for each one of those. And so we wanted to make it clean and clear. We've looked at a number of budgets, especially community services districts, other cities, and this appears to be the best practice. All of your operating revenue comes into the general fund. All of your departments show all of your expenses. And then when you look at that, anything that has a negative balance or if you obviously if you've got no revenue, then it looks like there's no revenue coming in for that department. That's not necessarily true. That comes from your general fund. That's what pays for all of those. But we're going to walk through this, and then I'll show you the other departments, and it'll be really, really clear to you. So that first section is just all your revenue lines. And so whether you'll see a fire marshal's plan review to our instructors, to every one of those, I'll call out line number 4261. That's a new one for us this year. Great chat with Chief Martin. We talked about fire equipment rental income. Say that a million times. We had that, but we also have, I won't say a new service, but a newer service the last year and a half, Chief, 2 years, with the water rescue program and a Type 3 water rescue program that Cameron Park Fire Department, with Cal Fire, That's the service that we provide throughout the state. And so when they go out to for pre-position is what we call it, whether it's going to be a flood or we send an engine, and when we have red flag days, like we, Chief talked about, there's a red flag warning, those things coming, we'll upstaff, and that could potentially be staffed. It might even be staffed on our own station, and there's revenue that comes back for that. The other thing is that they are different, and we want to make sure that we call that out. Fire equipment rental is very specific. That is a piece of apparatus only. And so that's Cal Fire saying, hey, we need to take your Type 3 engine or one of the battalion chief vehicles. They'll send that wherever they need to send that. It's essentially you're loaning or leasing that vehicle to them for that period of time. There's no people associated. Right? The mutual aid OES is very different in that it's likely going to include personnel and equipment. There's also an administrative fee tied to that as well. So that is different, and we want to make sure we split those two GL codes so we can track those separately. That's how that works. Okay. Try not to go down. Okay, pull number, page 29, and I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to look back to Mark a little bit because the community and the board has been asking for a very long time, what does our pool cost to operate, right? And so, Mark, you got any news for us?
Yeah, so we done some calculations based on, again, as General Manager noted earlier, we don't have a robust system, but we have enough information where we've arrived at an annual cost to operate the pool of $317,000, rounded up to $318,000. That is taking a proportional share of the gas, the electric, the direct labor for our part-time staff, and some allocations of our full-time staff. There's the depreciation of the pump. So just keeping it at a high level, $317,000. And what we've done then is we looked at the revenues that we get from the various user groups, and we're now starting to track that to get an idea of what kind of cost recovery do we actually have. So we're making strides in really understanding the operational side of the pool, as well as what kind of revenue can we get or are we currently getting, and then where do we maximize the opportunity to get more revenue to offset that $300,000 cost.
I think that the surprise to me, and I made a statement, I'm going to retract that statement from last time, I just assumed just by watching, anecdotally watching, that our swim teams took up a large majority of the time. And it really depends on the time of year, right? And so that's one of the things we looked at. Right now, it's fairly balanced. I think it was 27%, 27%, and we actually have a big portion of that as well, because remember, we've got rec swim, we've got swim lessons, we've got lap swim in the morning, we've got rec swim again at nighttime, and then, you know, obviously the maintenance day, we own that because we don't allow anybody in the pool, so we own that. So we actually have quite a bit of usage in there as well for us. Now, that does flip, obviously, when we have just lap swim in the morning and nothing else, and the swim teams have a lot more of that time. But the numbers were surprising to me. I can also tell you that we've got a really good handle now on looking at our pool chemicals, pool maintenance, the propane usage. That's allowing us to make better informed decisions and recommendations, and we are going to be looking at, you know, do we look at doing something different in the winter? Do we not heat the pool? I know that's a big conversation. We're not making that recommendation right now, but that's something that we'll be looking at. The other piece is, I know other pools have experienced this, is if you are going to heat your pool for a user, then maybe that user needs to pay more during that time period because we're only heating it because of that group. And so Mark's got a really good spreadsheet he's been using to track all that and look at that. And then finally, and I'll stop, is trying to get a handle on Brighton Energy, as you know, is the solar installer, but we have a PPA with them. We found out there's a PG&E bill that we also received, and then we just found out also that we've got Pioneer Energy, and it sounds like we're getting a rebate of about a couple thousand dollars on that. So we got to look at all of those and see what that looks like, especially when we're paying for the amount of energy that we generate we want to make sure that we're using all of that, one, and that we're not paying for something that's going somewhere we don't get any rebates back. So all that ties into this, and that's why it's taken so long, and it's still not 100%, I won't call it accurate, it's as best as we can. Some of the things we did have to, you know, put some allocations in, but I think Mark's done a really good job at that. All right.
So capital replacement repair costs included in that $300,000?
Yeah, so I did a 10-year depreciation on the pump, and so I put in $2,000 for depreciation each year on that. So it's been accounted for on a depreciation balance.
What about the tile slash plaster work and the decking repairs?
That we'll put in once we have the Browning Reserve study, because it'll give us a little bit better number. Right now, it would simply just be a swag for us.
Still an estimate. I mean, we know approximately. But, I mean, if you're setting your rates and you're not including those very large costs, you're leaving a lot of the money on the table.
Yeah, but we need to get that study to be able to raise the rates. I wouldn't want to raise the rates just based on a swag. I want to have that based on something, because I guarantee a community member will ask us, what's that based on? That's why we're waiting for the reserve study to be done. Then we'll know. No, it doesn't have to be Browning. That's the one we've used. It'll just be a reserve study. It's in the budget to do a reserve study this year, this budget year.
So we're talking about waiting probably at least a year before we get an accurate estimate of where our rate should be with those users.
No, I don't think it'll be that long, no. I think that we have numbers where we're at, and I can tell you, do you want to give them the numbers real quick? The what the collection number 70 or recovery numbers?
Oh yeah, okay. So based on the total user hours, there's about 1,750 hours that the pool is used. If you use that as your baseline of total hours, we're at a 40% cost recovery. So of the pool cost divided by the number of hours, we're getting about 70%, and it's based on the fact that of the basically it's $89 an hour for the pool, and the user groups are paying $72 an hour. But there's also the fact that there's a lot of time that the pool is not used, so it's not an exact number, because you have to also figure if you could put more people in the pool, then the cost could spread out over a greater number of users. But basically, you're running between 40 and 50 some odd percent cost recovery, depending on how you want to slice that. It's an asset, right? But I don't think we could program it at 2 in the morning.
Exactly.
Right? So you can't really use that as part of your calculus.
Right. It's your total number of hours. If you could work more, it would help everybody on what they pay.
Yeah.
I would just support the whole idea of having a surcharge for the users who are there in the winter, because a third of that cost is gas.
Yeah, but don't disagree with you. That's what staff, we've been discussing that thing. I know a nearby pool did that. And if a user is going to be using that and requiring it to be heated, then, yeah, I think we're going to pursue that. But let's get that study done. We can move forward. MOUs are going to be due this next upcoming. Every season we do new MOUs, and that's where we sit down with them and talk about what the fees are going to be and those kinds of things. I'd have to look back. I don't know that. Did she just raise them? Sounds like we just raised them this year, but I'll find out exact date for you.
All right. Well, I just know it hadn't happened in a while, so maybe we'll date this year. I'm not sure.
Okay. I'll look and then get that date to you. I want to call our attention. Oh, I'm sorry.
On this, so the gas doesn't differentiate the pool and the heating of the facilities. So it's $85,000.
We do have details. So there are two propane tanks here.
Uh-huh.
And so there's one propane tank for the pool. So we can capture that separately.
So is this $85,000, is that combined for both tanks?
That's combined for both of them.
So it might be helpful to you know, I'm sure you've done that already, but the budget is out. Where, you know, where that gas is being used. Right?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you. We can do that. On the fire department budget, I want to just highlight this one because there is some, I'd say, significant changes with respect to how we're budgeting for this, and so I want to make sure we talk about it. So that's going to be at page 40. When you look at how we've traditionally budgeted for the fire department contractual services, we have budgeted based on the not-to-exceed amount. And so CAL FIRE, we've sat and had lots of conversations about this to get to this point. What had happened was we always budgeted for the do-not-exceed amount, and then CAL FIRE would come under that amount, and they would make the budget just look like it's got this yo-yo effect back and forth, big swings of hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so we had a really good conversation, and we looked back for several years on what has our historical averages been, and we looked between the two, between your do-not-exceed versus your actual cost. And that ended up being just about 10.74% below the do-not-exceed amount. So when we apply that and look at that, that gets us a little bit more than $3.1 million. We put $3.2 million, and we feel that that's comfortable. We feel that's conservative. And then quarter two, we work very, very closely, specifically with Chief Martin on this. When we get those, we know that quarter two is going to be really our biggest bill, right, Chief? And so that gives us a good idea on if we need to do an adjustment at that time. But we're very comfortable with this approach. This approach is closer to budgeting by actual than not. I do know this is something that the county asked us. I know we had an ad hoc committee or a meeting with the county, and they discussed that specifically. Why do you guys budget that way? Why don't you budget based on actuals? And so that's our attempt to do just that. I feel very comfortable with this. This wasn't done in the vacuum. We've met four times with CAL FIRE, and Chief, I'll let you speak to that. I know you and Chief Blank and I had some conversations too.
Yeah, so when we talk about the way that CAL FIRE bills would bill on the quarterly system, and the way that it works for us is our employees are paid on a 28-day pay cycle, so we have 13 pay periods out of the year. And that 13th pay period falls in quarter two. So when we look at budgeting, we'll always take the quarter two and use that as our quarter four projections. So by the mid-year, we have a pretty good idea of where we're going to land with using the quarter four projection, and we can run that out to quarter three and get us in somewhat of a ballpark. So I think with what that's been proposed, we could be able to provide the information and then really look at it mid-year if we're high or if we're low and make adjustments at the mid-year as needed. So because really that quarter two is our biggest quarter out of the year, minus some other catastrophic events that occurs or an MOU change or some of those things. But we will typically know that by the mid-year. And so Chief Blankenheim and I have met with the district over this, and I think it's, if we look back in some of the old budgeting practices, we had the contract underutilization line within the contract, and it's a very similar process, just I think a little bit cleaner the way that we're showing it.
Okay, the other big proposed big change, and so, you know, obviously we talked a little bit about it tonight. Knowing that, yes, while it is a balanced budget, we do know we have deferred maintenance. We do know we have some things coming. We do know that year 4 or 5, we need to be looking for additional savings. But at the same time, we also just got a presentation that, a good chunk is moving into very high severity zone areas, which will have an impact. We put a position, the wildfire mitigation coordinator position, in the budget based on board member comments, and we heard you loud and clear. I think it was a couple meetings ago when we were talking about the new ordinance or the updated ordinance. We've heard it from the public loud and clear that that is important to them, and so that's why we put it in the budget. I will tell you that, and I'm not making a recommendation, I think maybe a thought is to potentially approve the position but not fund the position right now. Don't throw anything at me. I think there's some opportunities for us to look at, Can we do something? We grant funding. Can we do something to fund that position? I can tell you that contracting is not going to be an option for this because you're not going to have give somebody authority on our behalf to do those inspections. That needs to be somebody here. We've talked about a part-time employee. We'll understand that this is a full program. It is not just going out and doing inspections. There's the reporting. That's collecting the data. That's doing the... All of that has to be captured, especially now that you're also going to be talking about doing the, I think it's the 218 inspections, the real estate inspections. Now there's a monetary component that's tied to that. There's a revenue stream potential, cost recovery stream tied to that as well. So it's not a simple part-time position. The other piece is you wind up with part-time positions. You wind up training somebody constantly because they just don't stay. We don't pay enough and they want full-time hours. That's why we're not proposing a part-time position or a seasonal position. There is a significant administrative component. I can tell you this team, none of us have the capacity to manage that program. But I do think there might be some other options for us to explore. We'd like to explore those. But, you know, authorizing the position but not funding it perhaps, which means we won't fill it yet, not at the beginning of the year. Maybe that's something we look at closer to mid-year. I do think that this position is extremely, extremely important. Cameron Park has been known for years. Along with our partners next door at El Dorado Hills for our vegetation management ordinance for our processes here. Clearly, we have a significant threat, and that, I don't know if the threat got higher or just acknowledged to be higher. That's going to have an impact on insurance. That's going to have an impact on, you know, our community members. So I do think we should take that very serious. However, I also realize that we only had limited funds to work with. So let us look at some other options would be the recommendation. But we did put it in the budget. It is still a balanced budget with that position. I just want cushion looking out in the years moving forward. Thoughts on that before
moving
on?
Do you have anything that you're eyeing for that funding that position? Like if we're like, hey, we want the position, but we're going to have you go drum up the money.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea?
You know, great question, Director. I think we're looking at grant funding, but with the status of the current administration, it sounds like some of the federal funds are going to go away. It sounds like FEMA's potentially going to go away. So I don't know if it's going to come from a federal level. We might have to look at the state level, so work with our CAL FIRE partners or the State Fire Marshal's office and look for grant opportunities, PG&E, looking for grant opportunities, and looking for other agencies, potentially can we share a position or something like that. I think that's what we're going to need to look at. I don't know, because I haven't looked outside of our district, if others had changes in their LRA areas. I think our agency is different because we've got by far more LRA than most other communities. And so that might be why we had the biggest impact. But I think we want that opportunity to look at that. I want to work with Chief Martin and see if there's something that we can come up with. But it is in the budget. The budget is balanced with that position in there. I don't want to want you to think that we're wavering on it. That's why we bought Jeff in, because that was important information for you to have. So I wanted to call that out.
So if we were to give you that time to secure some funding for that position, and if you can't, then mid-year, you can come back at mid-year, and then we'll say we're just going to fund it.
Yeah. Exactly, and the reason why I say that is, one, if you fund it at mid-year, at least you're halfway through that, so obviously the salary goes down. Two is you're just at the beginning of starting to ramp up for the next season, because even if you hire somebody right now, they're not going to require people to go out and do any mitigation work in this kind of a weather. You clearly go out and do assessments, but it's going to change by the time you go out and do additional assessments. So that might be a strategy to look at that at mid-year. We start that early, and then at the ramp-up of the season, you've got somebody online. You've saved those funds until you get to that point.
And when would you think you'd bring forward the mid-year so we could make that decision?
I'd say December, January. January. Which gives you plenty of time to hire, get somebody up in speed, off and going by April, May. April, probably, to be early. Sound good? Or about?
Well, what's the cost of that position?
The cost of that position is $64,000 salary.
Plus benefits.
Yeah, it's a little over, right at about 100,000 if you look at Jim's position. That's what that is.
And that person will part of the fire budget?
No, and so we've had lots of conversation. Initially, my brain automatically goes to fire because it's a fire function. However, remember we just made some changes to our ordinance where we shifted that back under the responsibility of the district. So I do think it probably needs to be, you know, under the district, probably under administration here in the office. That's where I think it probably needs to come under.
And that's where you have it.
Is that reflected in the table, the FAD table?
No, because initially, again, we had that under the fire department, but I think we should move that under administration based on what we just talked about.
Where would they think it would be located?
I would agree with
that. I'm sorry, what did you say, Tim?
I would agree with your suggestion that we
okay.
I think in general we have savings in this budget and we haven't done that enough.
Yeah, so and again, I just want to caution everybody because I don't want people to think that it's not a priority. The reality is this inspector, we're not going to have people go out and clear their properties this late into this. We're in the fire season right now. So by waiting until mid-year to look at funding, look at the position, look for other options, I think that gives us an opportunity to ramp up and have them prepare to hit the ground running for the next season. So.
Well, it's absolutely a position that we must have.
100%.
Our constituents, our residents are scared to death of fire.
Agreed.
And yesterday didn't help. So.
Yeah, I just think that there's such an urgency with what we just experienced the last day or so.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the ideas for finding ways to
and these are just ideas. It is in the budget. It's a balanced budget with the position in there today. And then I also want to point out this isn't just a person going out doing inspections. This is also educating. And so this will be a person that works with the Fire Safe Council, that works with our FireWise communities. This is a person that's going to assist us with all of that and tied with the fire department as well, assisting there.
So couldn't we start with educating sooner?
Yes, I mean, you lose that savings all, you know, obviously. I'm just looking again for ways to create more cushion. And I'll stress again, it is a balanced budget with that position in there. Anything else on that? Okay. All right. So if you look at CC&Rs, it says we went back and gave a little bit more history because it is confusing sometimes, and some people don't even know what CC&Rs are. And so this really spells it out. It talks about the initial code. It talks about what it is. It talks about ARC. And if anybody's interested in volunteering to be on ARC, I'm looking for hands. We're looking for volunteers. Nobody. Okay, no takers. We're also looking for lifeguards. Thank you.
And volunteers,
exactly. So this gives you the history, the background. Now, this one is different. The reason why this shows operating revenue, property taxes, because there is property taxes specifically for CC&R. So we kind of keep that as kind of its own separate budget and department. That's why it's spelled out that way. The positions and authorization document, this just really tells you about you know, the positions that we're requesting, what's authorized. It gives you a good snapshot of how many people that we have. I will call note that we have, it's not depicted on here, but the fire department is on we're calling the PAD, the PAD. They are on there, but because it's a contract, we don't necessarily spell out the numbers. Okay, so they're not included in our full-time equivalent numbers. But we want to make sure that everybody knows, yes, this is one agency with the fire department. They're included on the PAD as well. So if you were to go to give you a brief synopsis of it, it tells you the position. It says authorized positions, actual filled positions, funded positions, and then the proposed changes is your far right column. And so you'll see a couple changes. You know, obviously, wildfire mitigation coordinator, we put that under one. We did put that under administration. You look at the receptionist. The reason why that's a half is really a lot of our time is spent in recreation. So the direct management is under recreation. However, there are some duties that she's potentially going to be doing both in finance as well as recreation. So we're doing a 50-50. That's really going to be an allocation based on the duties that she's doing, and that's going to change. So that's why you see a minus half and a plus half under recreation. Under maintenance workers, we've done a few changes, and we work with the local, the union on this, because we have made some changes. One is we use a service now that maintains our pool, that not only repairs the pool, but also takes care of our water, takes care of any of the service and things like that, where previously we had an employee. So clearly when you have a labor union, you want to make sure that you're not taking labor positions. And so we did have a conversation with the labor leader. Her statement basically, I don't like all of the changes with respect to contracting, but I understand the need. And this is absolutely a trend when you look at other parks districts, community services districts. The other thing to point out is nobody's losing their job. We're shifting those duties to get our folks more efficient and focusing on repairs rather than just general maintenance. So Mark's done a really good job, and he's we've not filled the position, but we've brought in a janitorial service, and that has been, we've got lots of kudos over how clean the facility is, specifically the restrooms. They just do a much better job, and we have them here 5 days a week, 7 days a week, 5 days a week right now. And the collateral benefit is they can help us with locking up and things like that too. So it's been really good. We did that as a pilot program. We'll be bringing that to you as part of the budget as a full program. So when we get the full agreement, we'll bring that back for your consideration. But it's been outstanding, and the facilities are top notch.
And that contract that you haven't brought forward yet is estimated in the budget?
Yes. Yep. So that's the plan there. The other position that we're looking at, we had a decrease in hours to assist with that as well. Not filling one position, decreasing part-time hours. What we're looking at is we don't have to necessarily have somebody here all the time. If we don't have programming, Mark's been really good about looking at that, saying, well, we have nothing that night. We don't need to have anybody there that night. However, if we've got swimming all day and we've got other events, then maybe he schedules somebody for setup. We schedule somebody there. But then we also have maintenance projects or repair projects, and Mark schedules them out based on that. So we reduced some of the hours, and you want to talk about that a little bit? Reduce some of the hours for part-timers?
We've reduced some of the hours. The general manager stated, you know, sometimes they were just sitting around. There was no event to set up. I mean, the trash cans can only be empty so often, right? So what we've done is we've kind of loaded it to the demand of our bookings, if you will. I have now, because we're in the busy season out in the parks, I have taken some of the people here. Last week on Friday, there was nothing to do here, so I sent a part-time worker out to the parks, because we got to get the parks ready for baseball on the weekends or soccer that's coming up. So I've also kind of broken down the barriers. When I arrived, it was, these were the parks people, and these were your facilities people. And I'm like, oh, this is crazy, because sometimes we're overloaded here, and we've had parks people come and help us. Likewise, now we're overloaded in the park side. So it's given me some flexibility. But the biggest savings on, because they're part-time, is I don't have to staff for them. I was running two part-time people, almost a full-time person, six, sometimes 7 days a week. We're not doing that now. It's not a good use of public funds to have somebody sit here waiting for something to happen. So I've been able to reduce that time, and that savings has helped fund the janitorial service, plus the reduction of the maintenance one worker.
I think, you know, our business is interesting, because we plan a lot, and so a lot of our events are planned almost a year in advance. So we know that we have 200 people that are going to be here on this Wednesday. We need security. We need to have, you know, one of our part-timers, and so it's pretty easy to predict. There's not a lot of events where it's right now, only when there's fire season. But other than that, it's pretty predictable. So he can predict his staffing out pretty far. So that's one of the changes. The other thing that we'll be looking at is landscaping services. We have we have some very expensive zero-turn mowers. I think we have three or four. And they're not your typical homeowner mower. They're tens of thousands of dollars, and we've had a lot of repairs, replacements that need to happen. The other part is we have a decent-paying employee operating a very menial task. We really want to get them back to the important parts, something that's breaking at the park, something that's breaking at a facility, repair that. I laugh and I joke, Krista McCullough, we look at that park, and really our part-timers and Mark specifically, they become archaeologists out there, because they always have shovels digging, chasing a leak. And I'm dead serious about that. So we want to get them to work on things like that and not necessarily riding a mower. I know that sounds bad. I don't mean it bad, but that's what we're looking at doing. And that is a trend in the industry to look at that. So we'll underfill positions to be able to cover the cost for that. And like I said, we have talked to the local about the concept and that they're agreeable. The capital replacement overview, this is really, again, this is where we want to acknowledge, you know, we have some deficiencies, but we have opportunities to plan for that. We can have these conversations. It's not an emergency. If you don't do this today, we fail. And so we are taking care of those things. I would say the closest thing was the pool pump. That was an emergency, but we found a way to get that here. That 6 or 8 weeks that it took for the pump to get here seemed like 10 years. Because if it went down, then all of our programming in the pool would stop and we'd have water issues and all of that. So when you read through this portion, this is specifically going to be, for now, until we get the reserve study, that'll look at all the other capital items. This is for vehicles. So your fire engines, your pickup trucks, the battalion chief vehicles, all of the parks vehicles, we have a pretty good job, did a pretty good job in assessing what that is. So they're about $573,000 in the fire apparatus or the fire department reserve. When you look at parks and facilities, their vehicles are, some are over 21 years old. The average model is a 2003. And so we've got a lot of donated vehicles in the past that are just old. The other thing that Mark has looked at is we're going to start looking and bringing to the board, getting rid of some of the vehicles that we have. I think we have seven or eight trucks. We only have three people there. We don't need that many trucks. So we're going to look at correcting that because that all insurance, registration, tires, all of those things, we don't need all that. And so we're looking to reduce that and get some newer vehicles. We'll work with Cal Fire when they surplus and move some things out. We'll replace those vehicles. And so that's what we're working on. As for the capital, and I did put a line in there, I think it's important that when we get all of our true capital replacement costs, then we'll have a number. We'll have a number to work with, and that'll tell us this is what we need to do. There's another spreadsheet that we don't have in here, but every single department, including the fire department, puts everything in that sheet. So I have a total at the top of each one of those and a summary sheet that tells us this is a swag, really, but we don't want to budget based on that. But it's for us to take a mental note of these are things that we need to be looking at down the road. So when we get the study done, we'll have a lot of information ready to give to the agency. Hey, these are some of the things that need to be focused on. The last part is a draft resolution, and my apologies, Director Wolfson. We felt we'd put a backslash in your name. I think that's a new thing that we're trying. We'll make sure we fix that and take that out. We do know how to spell your name. We got you covered. Last section, and I'm going to stop talking here, is at the back. We didn't want to make any assumptions. There's lots of general codes, and I get them lost in my head all the time. So this is a general ledger code glossary. And so it just tells you, and you can look at the budget sheet, the detail sheets. The associated code will be on there, and it tells you generally what goes into that. With that, I'll take any questions you might have.
Okay, questions from the board.
I don't actually have that. You said that we're getting our capital, we're getting our pumps done to the pool, part this year, part next year.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's one of our capital replacement projects that actually are in this budget.
Yes, and so we made a little bit of an adjustment because we didn't anticipate the pump actually coming in, and it did. So what we ended up doing, the pump was about $18,000. The installation is about $6,000, $6,000 to $7,000, $5,000 to $6,000. So the installation will be in fiscal year 26. The purchase was in 25.
So my question is, what other capital projects are in this budget besides that one?
Yeah, so we talked about the fencing out here. That was about $12,000 to $18,000. The reason for that, I know you say it's paint. Why are we going to do that? Well, you're likely looking at over $1 million of fencing when you look at the wrought iron, how it is out there. If we continue to allow the rust to continue like that, we will be replacing the fence. So it makes sense. Just to, I think Mark's going to use an electrostatic process to have that painted, and that will secure that.
Paint, around the pool.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And then also the fire department's got, you know, a list of items. They do a really good job in what fiscal year they want to replace things, and whether that's a refrigerator or a washer or a dryer. And here's Chief Martin walking back in the room right now. Those items are captured in that. So we try to put those items that they want to capture for this year in that budget. I know there's some asphalt replacement windows. And so we actually sat down and we walked through that. And some things have been completed. And so we'll mark on there as green. It's completed. And we'll move that funding out of that. Or we'll move that amount off of that so it reduces what the overall capital need is on that, if you will. But it's a good tracking document.
Okay. Would it be beneficial to list those, add those to our final budget?
We can put that in there.
Capital
absolutely.
They are in here already.
They're listed, but I think we can list it a little bit different way. We'll put it in one sheet so you see.
Okay.
Yes.
That would be nice.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So I want to thank staff for, you know, really busting this out. This is a very comprehensive document. I think you guys have done a really good job.
Thank you.
And all of this board really appreciate all the work that you've put into it, and on such a short timeline, too, because we were having some issues. My other comment, though, is the big thing that's missing from this budget is that we're not adding to our reserves. And we've heard Director Israel talk about it. I'm kind of on board with that. So is there a way... I would like to ask my fellow board members that it might be beneficial to the district. Should we look for like additional efficiencies, maybe some cost savings, with the eye of using these funds to actually maybe put a little bit towards our reserves?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just kind of asking my fellow board members if that would make sense for coming back with the final budget with any type of find us some.
Okay.
That would be my comment. Those are my comments.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, like you said, you know, potential grants or, you know, just other operational efficiencies.
But I think we've identified reserves, and I'm really grateful to see that in the budget. So that's a starting place. I have to second what you said. I'm very impressed with the quality of this budget, and I've been on board 5 years, is by far the best one. What it provides is a good narrative and numbers to substantiate the narrative. And it's very transparent. It's a very readable, understandable document. And I've been asking for this for so long, and I'm so appreciative that it's there. So once again, I'm just so impressed with our staff coming in a short time, putting together such a fine budget presentation. And I know we can improve on it, but that's always next year.
Well, I did find 3 typos. Seriously, yeah, though, given the short period of time, it's pretty amazing. Tim, did you have any questions?
Well, I guess I'm still not very clear on what exactly we are putting in our reserve funds. Also, in looking at the breakdown of the budgets, it appears that there's capital expenses coming out of the general fund, which doesn't make sense to me. So I have to ask staff to take a hard look at that and evaluate what the money should be coming out of reserve funds or from our general fund for capital improvements or purchases. As far as looking for more efficiencies and savings in our budget, yes, I fully support that. I'm not supportive of the budget the way it is presented. I'm supportive of that. I don't have any further questions.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I'm good.
I've had... I just have a couple comments, and I truly appreciate the hard work that staff has done. I believe this is the first time in at least 5 years that a balanced operational budget has been presented. So thank you very much. I think this budget supports a continued community services but we do need to work on reserves. So this is 100%. A great first step. And I also appreciate the new process that's inclusive of all of the staff, rather than having just one or two people put the budget together. You guys, the department heads, you're the experts, you know what you need, and I appreciate that you're bringing a realistic story to us. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also, my third go-round, so I don't really have any comments other than, you know, great job, and I echo what was said about investigating additional efficiency and cost savings with an eye towards funding our reserves. So with that, I will take it out for public comment. Do we have, yes, Vicki.
This is Vicki from the park. I also appreciate having the information, having clarity, and not wondering what line items we need and all those good things. So, you know, congratulations on all that. I am concerned about the, you know what I'm going to say, Mo, about the lead abatement situation. I worked with grants for many years. Grants come and go very quickly usually. They're usually meant to seed a position or a project, and then they fade away with the expectation that the entity is going to pick up the cost. It's not usually a long-term basis of funding things, with some exceptions. And there's nothing to stop us from funding a position and going ahead with it, and then you know, and look for funding through grants or whatever else, foundation work, I don't know, in order to you know alleviate the burden on the district of any particular project or position. I'm concerned that we're essentially writing off this season already in terms of fire, you know, weed abatement. Essentially, that's what this delay would do. I understand that there's problems with doing amelioration work at this point, given that we are already in the midst of fire season, obviously. But, you know, there is a lot of public education and a lot of things that could be done that I think need to be done in this district. And it takes a while to hire someone. It takes a while to find the right person. You know, the kind of delays are built into the whole process anyway to get a project up and going. You may not get somebody from this area. They have to familiarize themselves with what's going on around here, blah, blah, blah. So I'm concerned that we're kicking it down. I appreciate the attempt. Mo is, you know, looking for cost savings. And I you know me, I'm usually all for that. I just don't think that this is the position to do it with. The problem with finding cost savings in this budget is, like, you know, they've been doing a pretty good job with it so far. I don't think there's going to be any huge savings coming down the road that we're going to. So it gets back to the whole issue of what are we doing from here, and are you going to proceed with an assessment and all of that stuff. I would rather find some way to, I mean, it is within our budget that you've created, and we have, I think, done well by being conservative and not going, doing the not to exceed number in the budget. I think that was reasonable. So I guess that's my pitch for going ahead and getting this project going. I'm sorry, it's more work for you, Mo.
It's okay.
Thank you.
And I just want to clarify, you're right, it is in the budget. It is a balanced budget with a position in there. We're just providing other potential options as well.
Yeah. Anybody else on the budget? Yes.
Radnick Bowman, Cameron Park. I just have one question. Mm-hmm. On page, there's two indexes you got to juggle, but on page 145 of the PDF or page 40 of the PDF, second paragraph, speaks to the percentage of the fire budget. In the Jill Richmond era, we were told it was 63.8% to be precise. And I'm worried that it's dropping.
I get an answer to that, and I actually have a tab here. This is Brad on there because I knew you'd ask that question.
He's like a bulldog.
No, I just.
No,
it's a glaring difference that after doing the calculations with all the numbers you gave me, I came up with 54.91. So we're in the ballpark. But I don't understand why it's dropping.
Well, remember, it's of the overall budget. We're not talking about revenue. It's the overall budget, total budget. That's what that percentage is based on.
So the difference between the fire tax allocation and the fire operating revenue, according to spreadsheets, is 54.9% between those two.
Yeah, when you look at the total budget, I believe it's 7,332,850, something like that.
That would be 77,890.
And then you take the total budget for fire, which is roughly 3.9 million or a little, so that is how we got that percentage. You look at that as the total budget.
Okay.
I think what we've talked about. No, I know what we've talked about in the past. We've talked about the percentage of revenue. That number is different, and that's not what we're comparing in here. I contemplated taking it out so it wouldn't confuse the issue. I just didn't get there. But yes, I knew you would ask that question, and that's the reason why it says that. Yeah. I appreciate the question.
Okay, additional comments from the public regarding the budget? Yes.
It's very comprehensive. I like the idea of lottery. I like the idea of paying attention to a reserve study. I had a neighbor that came to a meeting some years ago who was a analyst or in Sacramento at the Capitol, and he was trying to tell the board, you better have a reserve study operating in your budget. And it, thank you.
All right, thank you. Any more? Yes.
Isn't the property taxes the source of funding overall initially?
Yes, that's our primary source is property taxes.
Does anybody consider going to the property owners for more?
Yeah, that is one of the conversations that we've been discussing is looking at what that looks like. And so we're working with a couple different consultants on, you know, when we go to the community, what does that look like? Is it a benefit assessment? Is it a parcel tax? And so that's the stage that we're in right now is looking. We also need to go out and poll the community and see what your interest, educate the community on some of the challenges here, and that will help us drive whether it's a fire focus or a parks focus because we have challenges on both sides.
So I'm thinking about this. What I'm reading in the national news or global news is, well, the average rainfall on the planet is staying roughly the same, but what we're having is it's shifting off of steady to episodic. So we experienced a couple of years ago 9 inches of rain in 24 hours, okay? And we also, I think we can appreciate that fire isn't going to get easier. Fighting fires is not going to be getting easier going forward.
Yes.
Until our vegetation across the Sierras is change. So in a generation, we might have a different landscape. It's true in the Rockies. But I worry about these extremes, the way they impact us, and we have to be ready and build up to fight that. It's an adjustment away from everything is normal over the last 10 years, the last 15 years. It's moving away from our own personal experience.
No, great points, and we're seeing that, you know, throughout our fires throughout the state. You know, years ago, you know, you'd be shocked to have a 50,000 acre fire. That was a major campaign fire. Now you're talking 1 million acres. That's a major campaign fire. So I appreciate your comments.
Thank you. Yes.
Instead of always talking about an assessment for fire, I would rather have you talk about an assessment for parks and rec. Because, you know, fire brings in a lot of revenue because and, you know, I agree with Brad. The percentages have changed a lot.
Okay.
You know, we had a supervisor stand in a meeting and telling this board, when Joe Ritzman was here, that you were reducing the funding for the fire department to fund your admin. So, and that's the truth. We all know it. if the money had not, if it was a 70-30 split, I don't think we'd be having, you'd have issues on the district side, but not on the fire side. Because I've told you before, it's this building that's sucking the money. So instead of always putting on the backs of the fire, let's put it on the backs of Park and Rec. Okay, let's talk about that. Because I will not support an assessment until I am perfectly convinced that this district is going to do right by my tax dollars. I've been watching this district for 21 years at meetings. We've been here since 91. And I am very impressed, Chief, with this whole budget. And thank you, the transparency, everything. The best I've ever seen.
Thank you.
And I hope that we, when we get someone new in here, that it doesn't all change again, you know. That's one of the problems we've had, is when new people come in, they change the way everything is. That's not the way it should be. The processes should be in place, and they should stay constant so we can all follow them. Thank you.
Understand.
Thank you.
And we are, just so we know, we are looking at parks, recreation, and fire.
Right.
We're working with a consultant to look at all of those, but
you're
calling spot on.
I wouldn't count on any grants in this political atmosphere in this country, so I don't think we can really, Monique, rely on people giving us money to help fund commissions at this time. If something's going to happen.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, and then, Madam Chair, again, I just want to thank my entire team, Chief Martin, and then also our finance consultant, Ken Campo. They have just been night and day and to get us to where we're at. So I just, again, just want to thank them for all their hard work.
I should have called a break at 8. But anyway, if there's no additional public comment, bring it back to the board. Is there any further discussion from the board?
I had a question on timelines. So when do our next steps and timeline and when we're going to see our next pass on our final budget?
Final will be in August. August will be final.
August will be final. Okay. Are we looking at this again and we're going to skip June, you're going to do all your work and figure everything out and come back in August with the final?
Yeah, so understand the fiscal year starts July 1. And so the decisions that you make tonight, that allows us to move forward with this as a preliminary budget. So it starts July 1, we'll start using those funds based on what's approved. And so really your biggest decision, quite honestly, besides the budget, is funding or not funding the defensible space position. I think given the information you received tonight, given the information you received from the public, it is a balanced budget with the position, and that's what I'd offer to you.
Anybody else on the board?
And then,
yes.
Close public hearing.
As soon as I verify that there's no further discussion.
Only comment is that I'm so grateful to see a balanced budget. It's been a long time coming.
All right, Tim. Anything?
I just can say it again. While we like to call it a balanced budget, we have an inadequate and non-existent capital replacement program, which requires significantly more money than has been put in this budget. So while we might like to call it balanced, we're just stealing from the future, and we need to take more money out of this.
Thank you. Okay, closing the public hearing. Do we have a motion?
I have one more item for discussion.
Reopening the public hearing.
No.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
I just want to talk about our fire mitigation specialist for wildfire. We need it. So I think, without a doubt, we're going to improve the position. The debate is, when do we start funding it? And I really like the idea of giving the GM some wiggle room, but maybe we don't want to wait 6 months. Maybe we say, see if you can find anything in 3 months, and if you can't, then we're going to start it.
Well, I think you can do that concurrently as well. So like I said, it's a balanced budget with the position. My recommendation is move forward with the position, but we'll still look for ways to offset the cost. One of those is going to be, you know, doing the 218 inspections and those kind of things, and work with Cal Fire on that. That's a revenue stream or cost recovery, so that's part of it. So, like I said, it is in there, and I recommend you just move forward with the position. We can do this concurrently.
Okay. I just wanted to throw it out there.
All right. So with that, do we have a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to approve Resolution 2025-13, adopting the Cameron Park Community Services District Fiscal Year 2025 Preliminary Budget with the, just to be clear, with the wildfire. And with you coming back and...
Yeah.
We'll just start with that.
with it being included or with it being funded?
Yeah, being funded.
It is in the budget, so yes.
Yeah, okay. I know. I just want to be clear.
Okay.
I'm not saying delay it.
Right.
Okay.
That's my motion.
Or is that more appropriate to staff, a direction to staff, a recommendation?
I think he's going to go for funding.
Does it go with funding?
Yeah, so approving this as is has the position in there.
Right.
So July 1, we can start recruiting for that position.
All right. Do we have a second?
I'll second that motion.
All right. Could you please call the roll?
Director Wolfson?
Aye.
Director Gilchrist?
Aye.
Director Bazette?
Aye.
Director Scobie?
Aye.
And Director Israel?
Yeah.
Tim, we can't hear
Director
you.
Director Israel.
I know, I do that same thing.
Sorry about that.
Oh,
sorry.
You're mute again. Oh. Okay.
No.
Thank you
Got
so
it.
Much. Okay, motion passes 4-1. And with that, did we have any comments or future agenda items? Okay.